It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia, Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Yes, a new week begins, the penultimate week of February 2020. There's just, a few more days left of February 2020, and then we'll be within visual range, almost, of spring. And we got a reminder of it here in the hills and hollers of almost level West by Cold Trump, Virginia stand today. The little jonquils are poking their heads out. I've seen a couple of them blooming. And, here in the fabulous Horn Studios at the magnificent Kincaid Mansion, it's 70 degrees. You know, not to ruin dinner in the Eastern time zone too early, but I gotta warn you, that's perilously close to naked radio weather. But not quite. Not quite. So, I'm in a relatively decent frame of mind. Stayed up too late last night. Agnes and I noticed there was a nice little lineup of movies on TCM. And so we had a TCM binge last night. Unpaid product placement for Turner Classic Movies. Let's see. Whoever programs this stuff has a real sense of the ironic and maybe a modicum of genius. They started with Philadelphia Story because it's their Academy Award, 31 Days of the Oscars or whatever. They started with Philadelphia Story, which won an Academy Award for Jimmy Stewart, but starred Katharine Hepburn. They segued from that into The Lion in Winter, and we all know how I feel about that film. And that, of course, won an Academy Award for Katharine Hepburn in a tie with, of all people, Barbara Streisand in 1968. And then that film featured Anthony Hopkins in his first film role. And so the next film was Silence of the Lambs, which won Academy Awards for both Anthony Hopkins and Jodie Foster. And then they segued out of that into Taxi Driver, which featured Jodie Foster and won, of course, an Academy Award for, I don't remember. And after that, but in Taxi Driver appears Peter Boyle, so they segued into that, out of that into Young Frankenstein, which all works up to getting to bed way too late. But it's nice just to do a little movie binge now and then. Sometimes you got to get away. And, you know, Southwest doesn't fly through West Virginia. No, it doesn't. But anyway, I'm in a tolerably decent mood. I hope you are as well. Seeing the sun for, like, 2 days out of 4 makes a big, big difference in terms of one's attitude. Yeah. Oh, no doubt that it does. And so, you know, more in Monday. It should be a good experience, I hope. Every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude because, of course, there are no Buy Gold Now ads or ads for General Steel Buildings or Lieutenant Steel Buildings or even Corporal Steel Buildings or floors from made from the wood of cut-down Asian rainforests or, no wavy radios or vacuum cleaners that pick up bowling balls. None of that silly malarkey. No malarkey. It's just y'all. Y'all keep this program on the air, and I am forever grateful for it. And so thanks go out to our subscribers for the 17th, 16th, and 15th of the month. That would be thanks to Robert in California. Thank you to Darlene in Connecticut. Thank you to Timothy in Iowegia. Thank you to a different Timothy. And thank you to Glenn in New York. Thank you to Reinhard on the Virginia coast. Thank you to Brock. Thank you to Christopher. Hope you enjoyed the NBA All-Star game. Looked like fun. Thank you to Nancy, and thank you to Gary Laborman. Thank you all very kindly. It is subscribers like you and a la carte contributors and our Patreon friends who keep this program on the air. Night after night, or afternoon after, day after day. Let's just call it that. Week after week, month after month, and year after year, and decade into decade. So thank you. Thank you very much indeed. What that means is that we've got all of... We've just got an ordinary fundraising goal this evening. $200. 10 people at 20, 20 people at 10. A few new subscribers along the way would be freaking awesome to land alongside with the two subscribers that we have for the 17th of the month. Thank you very kindly. But if we can raise $200, we won't be digging out any. We won't start this week or the middle of the month digging out of any holes. And God knows, as I noted last week, I had, you know, we were facing more bills than we had fundraising for the week coming in. Sometimes it happens that way. Especially in winter when heating prices and fuel and all that shit. But if we can just keep up with it, God, it would be wonderful. So, hey, is there any chance of us jumping out and knocking down $200 in the next hour so that we can have the other 2 hours not talking about it? It'd be really cool if we could. If you'd like to be part of the merry, madcap, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn Chat Room, pop on by. Early arrivers are there, Anatole and Squeaky and Silent R. Lamar. Hey, Silent R. And they're eagerly awaiting your arrival, all capably moderated by longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, although a third stage guild navigator, has refrained from folding space and today remains Man Cave. Or rather, isn't Man Cave and remains Sparky. So, yeah, hop on by. If you do want to be part of the fundraising, you know, you just go to headon.live, click on contribute, and it's pretty easy and seamless from there. So that would be mighty helpful and mighty fun at the same time. Oh, where to begin? Where to begin? What will you do? What will you do? No, wait, that's an old commercial. Scott apparently was hip to what they're doing with the programming at TCM. This year, they're not just doing the usual 31 Days of Oscar. The new twist is along these lines. Movie 1's star in also in the next film that follows, then a star in that film shows up in the next film. You're right. There's a bit of genius in the scheduling. I mean, how do you start at 1940 in Philadelphia Story and wind up in 1974 with Young Frankenstein? That's a lot of day. That's a lot of degrees of separation, but somehow it worked. And of course, it's President's Day. I had a note from Steve on the West Coast saying that It's President's Day some places and George Washington's birthday other places, and some people rap in Lincoln. But happy President's Day, says Dave in Talibandiana. Too bad we don't have any presidents anymore. Even Andrew Johnson was better than this guy currently in the White House. I was watching YouTube the other day when I came across something from Colorado Public Television about the Ku Klux Klan in Colorado, which had the second highest per capita membership in the United States. Sorry, Lady B, but it's the truth. By a show of hands in the congregation, does anybody care to guess which state in the union had the highest per capita Klan membership in the United States? Drum roll, please. Yes. Yes, of course. Indiana. And that was in the 1920s. They beat out Alabama, Mississippi, the entire Confederacy, and all 47 states at the time. With my state's racist past, is it any wonder Mike Pence is Donnie Douchebag's vice president? Just a reminder from your buddy Dave in the blind in Talibandiana. Of course, the idea of President's Day is entirely lost on the current occupant of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, or as he likes to call it, the dump. He tweeted out today, Happy President's Day, P-R-E-S-I-D-E-N-T apostrophe S. This is, after all, Moran Monday, recall, please. Happy President's Day, as in one president. You know, it's his. It's all his, definitely his. It's a day for celebrating me, and I get not two scoops of ice cream, but three, because it's President's Day. Jesus Christ. Oh, but it was a tough weekend for him. He had a hard weekend. I mean, when you get fucked over by Fox, well, that's not a good sign if you're nitwit Nero. He's standing there blathering away at Daytona, talking about it. Well, you know what I like about it is the safety and the courage and the bravery of all these courage brave driver people. And he was shitting himself at the prospect of actually having to go around the track in that big old presidential limousine that he's decided to call the Beast. I call it the Beast. And they couldn't get enough momentum going to get the Beast off of the apron and up onto the track for his trip around to get the Daytona. No. And so while he was blathering away, Fox cut away to, wait for it, because this is delightful, this is delicious, it's de-lovely. Fox cut away to a Mike Bloomberg ad, which we don't know for sure, but apparently pissed him right the hell off. And the next thing you know, he's on Air Force One and getting the hell out of Dodge or Daytona. Well, Dodge makes the Daytona, doesn't it? Anyway. Getting the hell out of there because he had to get back to D.C. because he had a wedding to attend. Yeah, last night, of course, at that tacky bedbug-infested pile of bricks that used to be the old post office building in D.C. and is now the Trump Emoluments Hotel, there was a special and lavish wedding taking place. That's right. Pee Wee Herman Goering, otherwise known as Stephen Miller, racist-in-chief, bigot-in-chief. Well, nah, he's the under-bigot-in-Führer, too. Right. But something, we know not what, something married Stephen Miller. Maybe a fembot, preferably a Nazi fembot. Maybe it had something to do with that story I was going over the other night about, what was it, Thursday? About Utah redefining marriage. Well, that would make perfectly good sense, Brother Deacon Asa says. I think what the slurring Septimus was really trying to tweet was, Happy President's Day. P-R-E-S-I-D-U-N-C-E. It would fit. And thank you to David in South Carolina Stan, for the President's Day reminder. Yeah. But no, he had a wedding to attend there at the Roach Motel. Stephen Miller, it's not a joke, really got married. The bride wore white, and so did Stephen Miller. And in a non-traditional approach to nuptials, they each lifted the veil on each other's white pointed hood. But he had a bad weekend. Yeah, a totally not good, very bad, lousy, rotten weekend. So, Silent R. Lamar is apparently not in the best of moods. Saying, forgive me, I'm sorry. Trump and the Republican Party, America is doomed. Well, Silent R, I understand. I understand. Wait a minute. That's a cowbell. That goes out to Brother Deacon Asa. I hear Stephen Miller and his fembot new wife are hood over heels for each other. Ah! Hood over heels? Yeah, that was pro. That was a pro comment. Don't try that at home. Kyle in Kentucky stands. Holy fuck! Something, someone married Stephen Miller? First question, how fucking racist is she? And second question, should that renew hope for all of us single people that there's someone out there for everyone? Well, yeah, kind of, Kyle, but it means that maybe the somebody that's out there for you might be a Nazi or a Klansman, and I don't know if that's reassuring. It wouldn't be for me. Scott in San Diego. One wonders if the arrival of their first offspring will be along the lines of the gruesome creature bursting out of John Hurt's chest in the 1979 film Alien. They're trying, I'm sure. They're trying. But then again, they've already got a monstrous infant. His name's Donald Trump. Meanwhile, a note from Lady B for Dave in Talibandiana. Google Ron Stallworth, Dave, darling. My oldest sister used to work with the brother. The difference is that we're so spread out and have a much smaller population overall. My state ain't perfect, but the Californians balance out with the libertarians. When it works, it's all quiet on the Western Front. It's when bored white males start getting antsy and wander across the railroad tracks. That's when shit starts getting nasty. Well, I'm more than happy to oblige, Kyle. Kyle says, God damn it, Bob, thanks for ruining my hope. Ray of fucking sunshine you are. I told you I was in a good and merry mood. Hood over heels. God, I'm going to hang on to that one. Oh, yes, I am. More on Monday. And we are not without material. Oh, no. We can kind of start. Well, wait, let's do this the right way. There we go.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
Hurry, hurry, step right up, it's Moran Monday on the horn. right here, right now. Just a few mere meager steps away from the Carnival Midway, where until recently you were throwing ping pong balls at goldfish bowls in the vain hope of bringing home a little baby iguana that would someday grow to be the size of a Volkswagen Beetle and probably eat your entire family, save for the fact that iguanas are vegetarian in nature. One never knows what could happen evolutionarily, though, because climate change. What the hell? Why not? Let's worry about it. No. We've got them all for you right here behind this thin cybernetic veil of canvas. They're just waiting for your appreciation, your delectation, your horror, your shock, your hilarity. Yes, birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, baggers, birchers, booger eaters, libertarians, maggots, trumpanzees. We've got them all, every shade of Republican under the sun, and they're just waiting for you. You can't tell the program without the morons without a program, you know, and this is the program that tells the morons. You just can't tell them much. No. That's right, for less than the cost of two and a half sticks out of a five-stick package of chewing gum per program, You too can make sure that Moran Monday arrives with the beginning of every broadcast week. Just run over to headon.live, click on contribute, put in 10.00, click the thing that says make this happen every month, and away you'll go. What you'll do for chewing gum, however, well, I worry about that. I truly, truly do. The general warning stands as ever. When entering the Moran Monday tent, do be mindful and keep a close eye on rings, bracelets, watches, necklaces, various and sundry other pieces of jewelry, including piercings. As children, small animals, even that iguana that you won throwing ping pong balls at goldfish bowls, and yes, European-style messenger bags, as the Morans can get grabby. Head for the hills. You'll be up to your armpits in morons. Oh, yeah. Oh, yes, you will. Because even in the grim, dark, and slow days of February, the morons remain active. And there are... There are a couple of them that just grabbed me over the weekend. It was a piece from the Washington Post. And it's a long read. Not that we're afraid of reading long things because, well, this is a community consisting primarily of practitioners of the art of word knowing. So we are not daunted by a long journalistic read, no. And this one had some value, and certainly my Moran Monday nomination is not extended to the Washington Post in this particular instance, no. It is a deep dive into how the Iowa caucus app fuck up happened. And you know, it's important to analyze monumental fuck ups so as not to repeat said monumental fuck ups if it is all at all possible to avoid. And we certainly don't want another one of those if we can possibly avoid it. And like I said, it's a deep dive. And there were fuck-ups on multiple levels. Apparently, even as they were getting ready to roll this thing out and they hadn't tested it worth a damn, and, you know, again, they hired a software developer named Shadow to do something that was supposed to be open and transparent. and then it turned out not so much. It turned out to be a giant screw-up. And that's kind of where the morality kicks in. There were screw-ups primarily by the Iowa Democratic Party, but there were also matters of shameless venality that went with all of this. And, I mean, you can't possibly have an election without having a highfalutin app thingy to crunch your data and your numbers so you can make charts and graphs and have color 8x10 glossy photos with circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one. I mean, except you can. And this thing reads it's really a great piece of writing. The author is Isaac Stanley Becker. And it reads like a page, some sort of page-turner novel. And it says that there was a bug in the software, they told him, according to multiple people present. That's when it all came crashing down. No results were published until the following afternoon. When the numbers trickled out, they were riddled with obvious inaccuracies. By the end of the week, an effort was underway to place blame squarely on the state party, which critics portrayed as ill-equipped and unprepared for its moment in the spotlight. They were not ready for their close-up, Mr. DeVille, or Max. And it goes on from there. But here's the moron part of it. It was all entirely unnecessary. The primary benefactor of having all that yummy, crunchy data showing how many 34-and-a-half-year-old Iowa non-college-educated women who knew how to bake a cherry pie, Johnny Boy, voted for Pete versus how many 41-and-two-thirds-year-old Iowa men of college-educated age who knew who killed Cock Robin voted for Bernie Sanders. Well, the only real beneficiary of that kind of crispy, crunchy data is who? I mean, I guess you could argue that 4 years from now, it would be questions being asked about 36-year-old women and whatever, and that it might have some relevance to the running of the actual event, even if it's whether it's a caucus or actually turns into a primary, which it should. No, the primary beneficiary of all that data was the for-profit media. And the multimillionaires thereof. Because nobody loves crispy, crunchy data quite like the multimillionaires of the for-profit media. They love it because it gives them something to talk about that sounds like they're talking about something, when in fact it's all just horse race. And eventually they will, they'd like to get data, individual data points down that can essentially overrule the idea of a secret ballot. You see what I'm getting at? They just want copy. because they've got 24 nearly interminable hours of news cycle to fill, and it's expensive to do real reporting from far. And so you get, instead of doing something simple, thank you, Dave. We got frontiered. Yep. Hey, so Dave beat you to the punch. Dave's competing, even if you're not. But none of it had to happen. All they had to do was use pencils and paper, tally the damn votes, count them, and come up with an answer. All that data stuff, that sounds rather, data stuff, that's just window dressing to make money for people who write code and write apps and then turn over the data to the multimillionaires of the for-profit media so that they can, in turn, use it to sell soap or pharmaceutical soap that may help to ease whatever misery it is you have, except for those people who, by virtue of side effects, it makes their nose slide off. And so the Moran nomination goes out, to the multimillionaires of the for-profit media, and to people in places like Iowa, who get hoodooed by campaigns that are intimately linked to that for-profit media, into spending precious donor dollars on something that actually has no particular meaning for them. I know, Kyle. Silly me. Bob, you can't be talking about something so simple and easy and traceable like paper ballots. This is America. We don't do things the easy way here. No, it reminds, and it's apocryphal. I'm sure it would never withstand a Scopes inquiry. But way, way, way back in the day when the Soviet Union was still a going concern, and they had their cosmonaut program, and we had our astronaut program, there was a story that used to make the rounds, and we're talking pre-internet, we're talking pre-fax machine, pre-beeper. But the story went like this, that as we developed our highly sophisticated space program, scientists and engineers at NASA realized that it probably would be necessary to write some things while in space, but that the harsh environs of zero-G environment would mean that ink wouldn't flow in a pen like it properly should, because pens are, well, they're reliant upon gravity. And so federal government contracts were let, taxpayer dollars were expended, and a bajillion dollars later, whatever it was, triumph was achieved as a pen, a ballpoint pen that would work in zero gravity was developed by the greatest country in the world on earth, now, today, forever in the universe under God. And it only cost a couple of million dollars to develop. And we proudly sent them aboard our spacecraft. The Soviets, meanwhile, having recognized the same problem, sent their cosmonauts up with pencils. Yeah, we saw some of the we saw some of the truth of this in a video that was put out over the weekend, and you know, it's just a reality. Then there's probably hundreds of them. In this case, it was a video of Bernie and Jane, having just come home from a trip to the Soviet Union, singing the praises of their glorious Soviet entertainment complex, whereby members of the glorious Soviet working class would get time away from their glorious Soviet jobs to participate in glorious Soviet theater programs and glorious Soviet opera and glorious Soviet symphonies and whatnot, and how magnificent the metro stations were that served as bomb shelters for the glorious Soviets and had chandeliers in them. And Bernie talked about the chandeliers, and Jane talked about the chandeliers, and they talked about the glorious Soviet the governmental entertainment complex, and people who couldn't get a loaf of bread sitting around and killing time by being geniuses at playing chess. Well, no, they didn't bring up the couldn't get a loaf of bread part. But it was all over. It was all over social media. And there will be ever so much more. Accompanied by either shouting or breathless commentary, Bernie Sanders praised the Soviet Union, even at a time when Ronald Reagan was saying, "Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this ketchup." Yeah, well. Wow, how did I get there? I was on the list. But, you know, people on both sides of the aisle were having conniptions and ripping at each other's scabs. And, yow! Hey, well, you got one too. Ah, Jesus! It's making social media a downright rotten place to hang out. Because among other things, Michael Bloomberg has moved on from just trolling Trump. He's trolling Bernie now. And featuring examples of Bernie supporters, you know, online shitty behavior, which is not that far different from any other political candidate's online shitty behavior. Because apparently there's something about social media, whether it be Facebook or Twitter or anything else, that just makes people behave shittily. I don't know. But the fact remains that institution, the only profession actually mentioned in the Constitution, a free press, which is supposed to be a bulwark of our freedom from tyranny, has become, in many ways, horrible and awful. Utterly addicted to crispy, crunchy, tasty data, and they can only they can't eat more than one. I mean, they can't eat just one. They've got to crunch all the data. By the way, as far as Daytona this weekend was concerned, Brad Parscale, who is the campaign manager for Nitwit Nero, got caught crowd was pretty sparse for that point in time when Nitwit Nero was making his appearance down there to Daytona. So Brad Parscale tweeted a photograph of Air Force One from back in the George W. Bush days when there was a huge crowd around it and got caught. Of course, you know, him getting fake news. It was a fake photo. That it was a fake photo is fake news of a fake photo of fake news. Lather, rinse, repeat. Ron in Raleigh says, I have a set of the Zero G pens. I used to see them advertised. I never got around to buying one because I wasn't planning on leaving the planet. At least not willingly. So, and besides that, I've got a thing for fountain pens. I like fountain pens. As to the happy couple, those two couldn't be happier if they had just loaded a cattle car with human beings. One wishes we still had a eugenics program. I don't want them to reproduce. Link to the New York Times story. Stephen Miller wedding with Katie Waldman. I've already seen the picture of their matching Klan hoods. Yeah. Big data from Iowa, Lee in New York. Says, yes, the granular data collected is to micro-target, micro-analyze, and micro-manage the electorate. When you want to motivate a person, you need to target that individual. For example, not all West Virginians are Republicans. Yeah, both of us. I kid. There's a lot of us who are still decent human beings and not Republicans. And there are some people who masquerade as decent human beings. They're still registered Democrat, but they go out and they vote for maggots. But yes, Flavio, this is indeed the February 17th program. Give me a sign. Here's your sign. Albert, filling in a few details, says the Fisher Pen Company has made the pen cartridge you just spoke of. They've had the NASA contract ever since the Apollo moon missions. The pen is still used on the International Space Station, and when it fails, it can still be replaced by a pencil. Yeah, I know. Kyle notes, my God, for a bunch of people whose only skill is lying to people, they're not even good at it. They don't have to be. They don't have to be because they don't have to even be good or convincing lies because they know that the maggots will just sit there and LARP it all right up. Oh, and by the way, this would be absolutely appropriate for prayer meeting Wednesday, but I'm going to go ahead and get to it now. It's just an annoying reminder. No, I didn't get to that part. I didn't know about that part. Oh, dear me. Ralphs wants to know, did you talk about Stephen Miller's wedding having an Elvis impersonator? I was talking to my sister for a while. What would an Elvis impersonator sing at a Nazi wedding? That is a question fraught with peril, even for a satirist or a parodist. Of course, I'm sure it wasn't early cool Elvis. It was probably chubby white jumpsuit Elvis. I mean, I think the bride's entire bridal design was just white. But I, just a little reminder that, you know, you heard it here first over the weekend via Newsweek. A story in Newsweek based on something that appeared in Charisma News. Charisma is a magazine for charismatic Christians. You know, the floor rolling, tongue speaking, Crisco head anointing, snake handling. Yeah. But a guy named Bert Farias at Charisma News, the website associated with the magazine, had an online hissy because he's angry. He's disgusted because that there Pete Buttigieg, he comes out and he kisses that husband of his, that man, right on the mouth in front of Merkel and God and everybody, and don't nobody throw up no more. No, here's what he actually wrote. The constant compromising of preachers to avoid controversy is creating much damage, not only to the world, which is looking for a clear sound from preachers. I think they're getting a clear sound from them. They make real clear sounds when they're down at the no-tell motel and they've just stepped out the back door of the liquor store with a 1.75 a hooch under one arm and the other arm around the shoulder of a young feller that they just met and they're going to witness to. But also to believers who have little discernment and are growing tired of ambiguity. For example, one very influential and popular minister who has millions of followers was asked if homosexuality was wrong. And his general response was that his views were evolving. Evolving, that's like saying the Bible is evolving. How pathetic of a answer. Here's where it gets interesting. And I hope the Secret Service, you know, I bear no ill will to Pete Buttigieg. He is not my favorite nominee. If he is the nominee of my party, I will happily vote for him and do so with a strong sense of patriotism in my heart. No, Bert Farias continued because, well, the first law of holes, like any scientific law, isn't in the Bible. In fact, when those who practice such things that are deserving of death also approve of others who practice them, Romans 1:32, it is one of God's final signs of his wrath on a society. This is a description of gay activism and constantly pushing for its normalcy and marginalizing those who disapprove. This is present-day America. How far we've fallen. Just to back up a minute so nobody misses out on what Brother Farias, who is a follower of the Prince of Peace, said, he cited a book in the New Testament that has little or nothing to do with who or whatever historical Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and semi-literate itinerant rabbi, may have wanted to people to do, because it's Romans is like the book of Romans is kind of like the it's the Pink Floyd Dark Side of the Moon of the New Testament. I mean, that's Paul just, you know, he's been huffing them tent fumes for all those years, and now he's down in a He's down in a dungeon in Rome, which they, you know, didn't have. Never mind. And just tripping balls. And you can see how when you're chained up in a hole in the ground, that your mind might begin to go a little soft. And so then he winds up, you know, he's chained to a wall. He can't even, you know, pass the time, if you know what I mean. And so he says, he claims that people who don't have sex the way he wants them to have sex deserve to die. By extension, Brother Bert Farias implies that so too does Pete Buttigieg deserve to die for kissing his husband right there on the stage. Well, no, I mean, he didn't kiss him on the stage. He kissed him on the mouth. And so somebody needs to kill him. Because, of course, they're Christians. And, well, God is love, y'all. And he claims that he's getting marginalized because people are civilized enough to not think that that's okay anymore. And then Bert Farias went on and said that it was hypocritical to mention the fact that Donald Trump has never been faithful to a single female to whom he's been married, and that he has been credibly accused of sexual assault, sexual abuse, unwanted touching, sexual battery by something like 24 women. Well, that ain't fair, says Brother Farias. If and you're not willing to call out Pete Buttigieg for kissing a feller, you know, a feller who he's married to, which he shouldn't be able to get married to in the first place because, well, yeah. Bert Farias was particularly pissed off because he says, well, President Trump's apologized for grabbing women by the pussy. But Pete Buttigieg, he's pushing his homosexuality and not apologizing for it. Buttigieg and others of his kind will do everything in his power to normalize homosexual relationships even more in the eyes of America, the greatest country in the history of the world on earth now, today, forever in the universe under God. They are the products of what the Bible calls a debased mind or a mind void of judgment that God himself has given them over to. Buttigieg will also do his best to marginalize those who are convinced that these relationships are contrary to the will of God. Well, you know, here we are. And whether it's Bernie waxing rhapsodic about glorious Soviet children's opera and puppetry class in Yaroslavsk, or whether it's preachers barking about how gay Pete Buttigieg is, and, you know, I didn't even know there was a quantitative measure of gayness. Go figure. I mean, would they be okay with it if he'd just shut up? Or if he'd, you know, give a Laurel and Hardy handshake to his husband on stage? I somehow don't think, oh, he's shaking the hands of a homosexual. Jesus is going to pinch his little noggin off and kick it into hell. That's what he's going to do. That's you, because God is love, y'all. And if Pete is the nominee, we will hear that unendingly all the way to November. And with a couple of notable exceptions, Christian ministers, pastors, brothers, preachers will be in the pulpit shrieking their fool heads off, threatening their simple their Simon Simple congregations with eternal torment if they should have the temerity to act like free people and vote for the candidate of their choosing if the candidate of their choosing happens to be a gay guy. And I hate to tell you, but there's a whole shit ton of people in this country who are still silly enough to believe in heaven and hell. And those threats work. I wish it were otherwise. Gary, just because of the abiding respect I have for this community and the fact that I don't want to go after dinner in the Central Standard Time Zone, I will keep your observation between you and me and probably some algorithm at Google. I don't know. But I get it. So that the contest is shaping up. I've seen Pete referred to as a rat, and not by Republicans. Then over the weekend, some political activists took a coffin to a Joe Biden event. One presumes that they were trying to imply that Joe Biden's campaign is dead, which just goes to show you what a tiny amount of thought went in to that stunt, because Joe Biden has lost, he's buried a wife and three kids, including his son a couple of years ago, who was taken from him by cancer. Stay classy. As to Pete Buttigieg, and he kissed a man right on the mouth on the stage. Kyle says, they'd be okay with it if he'd just do it and shut up, whatever the fuck that means. Then they don't have to hear about gay people existing, and hey, they don't exist. Magic. Right-wing Christian logic at its finest. Although this is kind of why, even though Mayor Pete isn't my first choice, it would be funny to see the meltdown of right-wing talk radio if he won. Oh, yeah, and recent recipient of the Presidential Medal of Freedom and guy who keeps his wife in a pit, Rush Limbaugh. And you know, the guy who played Jamie Gump in Silence of the Lambs, I didn't realize it, because he's so compellingly just in the film, is the guy who goes on to play the mustachioed, long-suffering boss of Tony Shalhoub's Monk in that incredibly popular series, Ted Levine. But in many ways, that movie is somewhat ruined for me now, Silence of the Lambs. Because whenever whenever Buffalo Bill goes to speak to his captive, instead of his voice, I always hear Rush Limbaugh's. It puts the lotion on its skin, or else it gets the hose again, my friends. Do you have a pit in your home? Would you like to have a pit? If you'd like to have a pit, I just want you to know that there's no better place to put a pit than in a General Steel building with flooring from Lumber Liquidators. Just fill in the word Rush. Just use the coupon code Rush Keeps His Wife in a Pit, and you'll immediately get 10% off your first order. It just happens now. But, yeah, recent Medal of Freedom recipient Flush Limbaugh was heard to say on his program not too long back, Mayor Pete was standing there kissing his husband. Can't you imagine that Donald Trump will have some fun with that? Kyle says, yes, Bob, us Bernie bros, we're pro-death and anti-gay because we don't support Pete and are making fun of Biden's campaign being dead. Just fucking stop. That's why I miss your program most nights anymore. Just admit you're scared shitless of Bernie, too, and since you know his policy is popular, this is what you go to. Oh, my God, some of his supporters don't like other candidates as much. Boo-hoo-hoo, give me a damn break. Well, no, Kyle, it's not that at all. I don't have a chosen candidate, Kyle. I don't know how many times I can make that, how I can make that any clearer. What I do know is that if every single one of us isn't in absolute agreement come November 3rd, we're going to get 4 more years of Donald Trump. Now, if you're okay with that, that's fine. I'm not okay with that. I'm going to vote for whoever the nominee is because I don't get a choice. My primary doesn't come around till May the goddamn 12th. And so I have to rely on a lot of people who are a hell of a lot less intelligent than me to make my choice for me. Not talking about you, Kyle. But if the best thing you think you can do, if the best thing you can do for your candidate to advance your candidate's cause is to torment a man with a coffin who has buried children and a wife, the wheels ain't turning so good. And that's fact. I'm not scared shitless of Bernie. 90% of my policies are to the left of Bernie. Now, I am scared about some things regarding Bernie, like the fact that the odds of him dying in office as an 80-year-old president are statistically much more elevated than they are for someone who's, say, 60 or 50 or 37. But Mayor Pete's a little too corporate for me and a little too anti-labor. What the president of the flight attendants union said the other day resonated with me. If you use the word they to describe members of organized labor, that means you're not on the side of organized labor. And Pete did that. I saw something today where Elizabeth Warren was talking, and she was talking about her paid family medical leave bill. And she said, you know how I know it's a good plan? Because it's not my plan, it's Kirsten Gillibrand's plan. And the first thing that went through my head was, well, hopefully it's a better plan than her keep two loaded rifles under the bed in a house with little children in it plan. For self-defense, because she did that. So, no, I'm not scared of Bernie. Jesus Christ, Kyle, maybe you weren't listening to this program in 2016. I was pro-Bernie all the way up till the moment when Bernie lost. And then I went and I passed the quadrennial one-question IQ test. Because I voted for my party's nominee. If we had a little less people out there running around shitting themselves online, being shitty to other people, and I'm not talking about Bernie people only, or Pete people only, or Liz people only, or Bloomberg people only, or Biden people only. If people were being less shitty to each other, we would have a more meaningful opportunity to beat Donald Trump. Sorry, phone. Trying to get everything all lined up. But I don't know why I would be afraid of Bernie. I am afraid of what happens to this country if a president drops dead in office, and that means that I'm a little bit more nervous about any 80-year-old president, and right now we've got three who were fairly near the top of the list who will turn 80 in office. They were not what the framers and ratifiers of the Constitution had in mind for the presidency, because people, unless you were Ben Franklin and a couple of others, generally did, you know, Jefferson made it to 80, so did Adams, but they were not in the best of shape by the time they got there. And the argument of, oh, well, he'll pick a really cool vice president, whether we're talking about, let's go real slow here, whether we're talking about Bernie or Biden or Bloomberg, does not, it doesn't make me feel any better about it, because whatever the, there's nobody in this country younger than me, and I can't either, who remembers what it's like to have a president die in office. I've made this argument before. I'll make it again. In this era of rampant disinformation, the chances of having a transfer of power that are just seamless upon the instant of an octogenarian president dropping fucking dead in office are approaching zero. There'll be more conspiracy theories banging around out there than 9/11, Pearl Harbor, the crash, the explosion of the Space Shuttle Challenger, the moon landing, and vaccinations all added together. And to think otherwise is to not really recognize the world we live in. Because it would be horrible. Horrible. And then there are the exigencies. Okay, it's not going to be horrible. But you have to admit that a 78-year-old picking out a vice presidential running mate has a lot more potential gravity to it than does someone younger. A lot more gravity. Because there's a lot greater likelihood of that vice president becoming president. Is there anybody, and at least Biden has well, not at least, but Biden's acknowledged the possibility that he wouldn't be a two-term president, which means we would fight this fight all over again 4 years from now. Does anybody think that anyone who turns 80 in their first term is going to be a two-term president? Because that's just way, way, way too much wishful thinking. And maybe it's because maybe it's an age gap thing. I'm old enough to remember what a doddering man with a head full of soup Ronald Reagan was, and he was younger than Bernie, Bloomberg, or Biden is right now when he went toddling out of the White House. And at that point in time became the only man in America who didn't know Ronald Reagan had been president. Yeah, Flavio points out that Heinz Alfred Kissinger, Henry, he's 96, fat as fuck, and still around proffering sage advice, just saying. Yeah, that's called a statistical outlier, Flavio. Are you telling me that if he wasn't evil incarnate, you'd want him to be president at 96? I don't think so. Dave in South Carolina, Stan, points out, also, the mainstream media fails to note that DT is no spring chicken either. No, he's not. But you know what? If our nominee is 78, Donald Trump will be the younger candidate. Ponder that for a moment. I'm not trying to piss anybody off. I'm trying to put out reasonable, rational facts out there. And the reasonable, rational fact is they're going to eat Pete Buttigieg alive for being gay, and they're going to eat Bernie alive for being a fill-in-the-blank commie socialist, socialist commie, pinko panty-waist commie socialist, liquor drinking in his underwear, anarcho-syndicalist, whatever. Watch. It's already happening. And I'm not talking about me, and I'm not talking about you. I know what the issues are. I have a good understanding of them. But you know what I have an even better understanding of? The American people. And a long, long time ago, long before I was born, a very wise man said something along the lines of, you will never go broke betting on the stupidity of the American people. Now, Nitwit Nero is a septuagenarian. He's a septuagenarian with in horrible health. Maybe we'll find out the answer to that question of what did. Oh Jesus, can you even begin to imagine the wild ass conspiracy theories that would be thrown around all the way around the planet in that event? Nancy Pelosi had his soup poisoned. See, there was a reason he wouldn't eat nothing but McDonald's. And then that one day he had a bowl of soup, and Nancy Pelosi done poisoned it. Can you not hear it? Lee in New York says, stop it, Bob. President dying in office. We all know there's only one evil genius who will pull this off without a trace. Hillary Rodham Clinton. There will not be a mass of conspiracy theories. Only one is necessary. Oh, what songs did the Elvis impersonator do at the wedding? at Stephen Goebbels Miller's wedding? I'm not sure, Bob. The choices are endless. Pepe the Froggy went a-courtin'? Cotton Picker Fields? Cross Burning My Heart and Hope to Die? Dixieland Cuck? Hey Jews? In the Warsaw Ghetto? It's No Secret I'm a Nazi? Kissin' Cousins? Milky White Way? My Caged Baby Left Me? And last but not least, Knight Riders? Oh my. Brother Deacon Asa did some working on that one. Lee in New York says, Mayor Pete, I believe the astonishingly dumb assaulter sees that kiss and thinks, if two Democrats can kiss on stage, I can grab melanoma and all other women in reach. Well, he's kind of already done it, hasn't he? Right. Yeah. Note from Lady B. I appreciate it when folks tell you they appreciate hearing about things from me, from my different perspective. It's important, and I'm glad I can lend enough clarity. Hi, clarity, girlfriend, for folks to get a better view of life outside their own lens. You mentioned Bernie's time in Russia. I know his bros hate it, but that's a very real and specific distinction. And frankly, I don't care where he went as a hippie. He was, is a goddamned hippie. Hell, Trump never even claimed to be a hippie, yet he's all up in Putin's DMs. But the fact that Bernie thought communism, even as an ideology, was something that would never come back to bite him on the ass is naive at best and downright stupid at worst. Again, I don't care. I think he's a compassionate, passionate, self-driven crusader for trying to bring justice and equality to America. And as such, many of his ideas are unrealistic. But I also know how most white people think. Y'all do too. You know them as mom and dad, grandma and grandpa, and or your next door neighbor. Right. I just got my ass jumped. For not being sufficiently Bernie pure, I guess. When I've said time after time after time, whomever is the nominee, I will vote for. And I will do so convinced that it is the most patriotic thing I have ever done in my life. But don't be telling me to get on some goddamn bandwagon when the bandwagon doesn't pull through here till May the fucking 12th. It's really, really annoying to know that one is reasonably intelligent and still doesn't get to exercise the franchise until millions of far less intelligent people have already done so. Yeah, that's a little hillbilly elitism for you there. Not you, Lady B. So anyone, says Lady B, after I editorialized, so anyone who may have a visceral reaction to Bob bringing up Bernie's past, grow up. For some white folks, Bernie's ideology really, really matters. I don't know how Bernie can convince them that they, but most importantly their children, would be better off voting for some of his policies, but maybe that's your job, Bernie bro. Right now, y'all have a white man telling you some white people aren't feeling the burn. So before you convince folks who already vote Democratic, convince your own family first. As for me, I'm voting for the Democratic nominee, no matter who it is. See, if you do happen to be in one of those states where your primary vote matters, vote your heart. Do so joyfully. Do so, whistling something. Smile on your face, song in your heart, spring in your step. I mean, I guess there are some people who are going to go and vote for Biden that way. I haven't met any of them. There's probably even a couple of people who are going to vote for Amy Klobuchar that way. Again, I haven't met any of them. But it's the primary, and that's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to believe fervently in your candidate if you're into that believing thing, which I'm not. Again, I don't worship. Y'all want to worship a political candidate? Knock yourselves out. I'm not getting on one knee. I'm not getting on two knees. I'm not bowing my fucking head. I'm not lighting a candle. I'm not lighting any incense. And I'm not pinning any spiritual hopes on any candidate. For they're all in all, they are just people. But put your passion into your primary vote. But don't be all butthurt if it doesn't work out for you. And if it doesn't work out for you, don't be absolutely convinced that it was done stolt from you. Leave the vote stealing until November, because that's when it's going to happen. Did you catch the part where, I guess they were PETA activists? New York Mayor, I think this happened out in Nevada. New York Mayor Bill de Blasio had just gotten done giving his ringing endorsement to Bernie when two or three women naked from the waist up, who were some sort of animal rights activists, came up and seized the microphone and yelled at the Bernie crowd for drinking milk. While a couple of them doused themselves in milk. Okay. Then they were quietly helped off the stage. And when I read about it, I was like, why would you do that, Bernie? Because, you know, Bernie's not exactly in the pocket of big meat. And then I realized why. Because one of Bernie's honorary co-chairs is, wait for it, Ben Cohen of Ben and Jerry's Ice Cream, which uses a lot of milk. And of course, Vermont, for the tiny state that it is, has a whole lot of creameries where they milk cows. Moo, y'all. Moo. I find it interesting that they decided that that was where they wanted to make their stand. Do you reckon it's because they thought that they'd have a friendlier audience there than some other rally? That maybe a Bernie crowd would sit there and go, you know, I don't like ice cream so much after all. Feel real terrible about it. And fuck all that yogurt, too. Doggone it. I don't know. But it's silly season. And it's going to get sillier. However weird yesterday was, today's going to be weirder. However weird today has been, tomorrow will be weirder still. So, going back to the for-profit media and the unnecessary fuck up of the data. No. Asa says, "Oh, sweet baby Jeebus, please let it have been breast milk." No, it was cow's milk, because nobody's supposed to in PETA purity world. Nobody's supposed to drink milk, because that's barbaric and gross and yucky, and everybody should be, you know, I don't know, it's PETA. God only knows how their brains work. No, it was cow's milk. So that's even funnier. They abused, they claimed cattle are abused by being milked, so they got some abused cattle milk and poured it on themselves. Yeah, I know. Anyway, for-profit media, Flavio reminds us, Noam Chomsky and the late Edward S. Herman wrote a book called Manufacturing Consent, The Political Economy of the Mass Media. Ever since reading that book, and with rare exceptions, I've never seen the for-profit media as anything but prostitutes. They are, after all, the reason we have Trump. They gave him $1.5 billion of free advertising, according to the New York Times. Other outlets reported more. And you know what CBS's Les Moonves said about Trump being bad for America but great for CBS News. That's exactly what he said about them, or about Trump. And then he got bounced out on his ass for being a gropey, pervy old creep. Yeah. So like I said, we're not short on morons. And we've got even more. And we're almost to the halfway point of this Moran Monday. Like I said, I was hoping we might knock out the fundraising goal for this evening so we could do 2 hours of fundraising-free radio. But no, we're still at a goose egg for this here Monday. So maybe we'll get off the schneid somewhere. Somewhere along the way this evening. Vote for Bernie, says Randy in PA, and pass the Cabot cheddar. Cattle are people, too! Yeah, Cabot cheddar. It's good stuff. It's made in Vermont. Man, I've worked this whole pimento cheese thing down to a science. I made another batch of it this weekend. Agnes says it is the very best that I've ever made. And I got to say, it worked out quite nicely. And it's so very simple, but it just packs such a flavor wallop. You can tinker with it a little bit. You can throw in a couple of dashes of Worcestershire. I like to crumble up 4 of those little BB-sized chili peppers in it just to give it a little bit of a kick. And it's perfect. And you know the weird thing? Pimento cheese is better on saltines than it is on Ritz. Ritz are too rich. Go figure. I think there's more fat in a Ritz. Maybe it's just an overload. Yeah, and David in South Carolina, Stan, reminds me about what happened outside the polling place for early voting in Chatham, North Carolina. Pittsboro, North Carolina, where they showed up with the treason rag and their Trump 2020 Keep America Great flags. Yeah. They were holding early voting in this one particular location in one part of the building, and the other part was having a community discussion about the viability or unviability of monuments to Confederate, monuments to people who committed treason against the United States. And on the side where people were showing up to talk about the need to get rid of monuments to treason, the maggots showed up and planted Confederate flags all over the place. I guess they felt like somehow or another that made their position more valid. Yeah, thinking is not their long suit. Let's go over and check in with Scott. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Bob. How are you?
Just fine as frog hair.
Split 4 ways with a broad axe, right? Right? I wasn't quite ready. You're pretty good at this. You surprised me. I haven't seen topless activists on the political scene for some years. The last time I witnessed it was in 1984 when some topless women showed up for a Walter Mondale rally with signs reading Tits for Fritz. And it was a big deal. And I, a proud American moment. Anyway, geez. Not even a chuckle? Come on, man.
I'm smiling. I was getting a drink of water, man.
Oh, I'm sorry. No water through your nose, even? Hey,
yeah.
Come on.
Yeah, this is I can't find my little metal straw.
Granted, this is not the A material, but we do what we can on a Monday, you know? anyway, I apparently am not up to speed on the coffin at the Biden event story, I wonder if the message being sent has less to do with doing him any harm than symbolizing the status of his campaign.
Well, no, that's what they were too clever by half. That's what they thought they were doing. So they did this impromptu black coffin with the Biden logo on it, and they because they didn't want anybody being confused, they drew a little line that said nails, and then they named issues whereby he had transgressed their vision of how he ought to be.
But what they
overlooked was the fact that they were bringing a big, shiny black coffin to protest a guy who buried small children, buried an adult child, and buried a beloved wife.
Yeah, and barely missed getting killed himself. Wasn't he in the car with the wife and kids, or maybe not? I don't know. But
yeah, it was a horrible, horrible car wreck.
Yeah, yeah, his first wife. Yeah, geez. I don't know. Maybe I'm old-fashioned. I remember when coffins were used in anti-war demonstrations to represent, 58,000 war dead needlessly in Vietnam. But maybe that's just me, And I'm old enough to have been to rallies featuring that symbolism. Am I old or what? What is the process for getting your state part of Super Tuesday, or at least an earlier primary? Because it wasn't all that long ago that California, my adopted state, wherein I've been here almost 20 years now, their primary used to be in the first week of June.
Well, it was in 2016.
Was it that recently?
Yeah.
I didn't realize it. I guess it was. I have no concept of...
Because people who think I'm scared to death of Bernie might want to go back to that time period and check out a filibuster I did begging California to do the right thing and give California to Bernie.
Yeah, and I tried, man. I tried on my end. March of that year, Bernie was in San Diego, and I, down at the convention center where Comic-Con takes place every year, I stood in line for over 4 hours.
I remember the phone call. Ended
up getting in the overflow room, and then after the big event, Bernie came over to the overflow room to say hello to us. But there's damn few people on this planet that I would stand in line in excess of 4 hours to see. I'm just saying.
The Stones, Bernie.
If the Beatles could somehow magically get back together, I'd stand in line for that, but that ain't going to happen. But I'm telling you, after the excellent Friday on the front porch this past Friday, Rick happened to be on the line after you disengaged, and we chatted for a few moments. And we were talking about the various candidates and who we like and stuff like that. And it occurred to me that something that a lot of people miss is when these candidates are running, all of them have a list of promises and pledges and ideas and hopes. And really it amounts in so many ways to being like a kid's wish list to Santa Claus around Christmas time. I don't think there's ever been a president who's come remotely close to achieving even half of the things that are on their list in terms of positions or campaign promises or if we could do it, could we possibly do this sort of items. It just doesn't happen, because if you compare
Scott, every 4 years, the American people forget whatever little bit they know about the Constitution of the United States and the separation of powers. And every 4 years, people run for president saying, And if I'm president, everybody will be able to shit ice cream. And yay, ice cream shitting, yay!
Yeah.
And none of it, little or none of it ever happens. Because it requires something called the cooperation of Congress.
Yeah. You've got to pass it in both houses, and then you've got to have a president willing to sign it into law.
Right, and now and, and then the modern variation on the theme is that then you have to litigate it for the next 16 years in front of the Supreme Court.
Yeah. So there's all kinds of flaming hoops.
Flaming barbed wire hoops.
Yeah, that we're forced to jump through. You know, and say what you will about Lyndon Johnson. I think he's about the only president in my lifetime who made good on a large number of pledges and promises, or maybe found them as he went along. And if it hadn't been for that damn Vietnam War, he probably would have gotten more done and would have gone down in history as a somewhat better president than history has been treating him, at least the last time I checked. And I am so waiting for Robert Caro's final book stop or doorstop installment of his ongoing series about LBJ. Those books, I know a lot of people don't like them, but I have learned quite a lot, especially about his early years as a young man and as a school teacher. And his earliest days in politics, when he was first in the House of Representatives. You know, we don't make him like a lot of those people of his era anymore. I think of people like Humphrey and people like Gene McCarthy and people like Lyndon Johnson and Wayne Morse of Oregon, I believe. And Fulbright and just the giants of the U.S. Congress, the House and the Senate, Wright Patman, for Christ's sake, who from Texas, I believe, who was on the banking committee. Did you know that Wright Patman had a lesser known investigation into Watergate back when that was breaking open? Because of his connection to the banking committee and the money that turned up in the Watergate burglars' duffel bags, gym bags or whatever, along with the rubber gloves and the cameras and the, you know, the pictures of documents and the tape on the door and all that shit, he wanted to know where all that damn money came from. I forget the dollar amount. Okay, but and he held hearings to get to the bottom of that aspect of the case, and it was much lesser known than the Senate Watergate hearings chaired by Sam Ervin, you know. But I guess it just goes to my point about the people who we voted into office from various parts of the country, who back then seemed to know what the fuck that they were doing. And they seemed to take care of the folks back home, but also do the nation's business.
Well, look, I refuse to get misty-eyed about those days simply because I know what undergirded it, Scott.
What am I missing? I'm not getting misty-eyed. I'm just remembering back when the Congress was a great deal more functioning and effective than it is now. I remember when presidents, you could take sides and like them or dislike them, but at least they were
sure,
people.
Sure, I mean, no, things like that did exist. There was a time when a House and a Senate created a cabinet-level body called the Environmental Protection Agency and sent it to the desk of none other than Richard Nixon, and he signed it into existence.
Yeah. I would like to see some of those days come back again. Obviously, without the excesses and the
well, but things have changed dramatically since then. We've gotten not more, not less, but more corporate and otherwise dirty money in our politics. It has become expensive on a level that would have shocked a Dirksen or a Fulbright to even be able to run for office.
There's that.
And you've got the general transformation of the Republican Party into a reactionary white supremacist party. Those are all realities.
Yeah. Well, I know that.
And again,
today.
And again, it doesn't all begin with Ronald Reagan's ascendancy to the presidency, but a ton of it does.
Yeah.
And so if we can drag ourselves kicking and screaming back into the present.
hey, well, you brought up presidents dying in office. I wasn't going to go there, but I will if you want an honest-to-God memory.
No, I'd like to drag us kicking and screaming back into the present for purposes of analysis of who what can we get done.
Well, and that's the big question. What do we demand be done? That's what it comes down to, I think. Maybe we're not demanding enough.
Over the weekend, over the week. Okay, so if you remember your for-profit media well at all.
Oh, yeah.
You might recall that back in 16, 17, it's going to be a bellwether election to find out just exactly how strong Donald Trump's coattails are. And there was a guy named Connor Lamb.
I should know that name.
Who ran for Congress in Pennsylvania, Western PA.
Okay.
And Connor Lamb decided to take to tweeting last weekend. And he tweeted an article from The Hill titled "Sanders Ocasio-Cortez Bill Would Outlaw Fracking by 2025." Now, I don't think there's any argument to be had that there's nobody but a bunch of assholes who get their pockets lined by the fracking industry who will tell you that fracking is a net good. Because of the amount of water it poisons, the ultrafine particulates it puts in the air, the people whose lives are sacrificed in the name of the profits generated by that frack gas.
Okay? And don't forget fire coming out of your kitchen faucet. Don't forget that.
Right. So Connor Lamb, who has a D behind his name, tweets, "In the most important election of our lives, Senator Bernie Sanders and Representative AOC are celebrating a bill that would eliminate thousands of good union jobs in PA 17 and across PA, a state we need to win. What are we doing? We are Democrats. Jobs come first." And then he continues and says, "We need to massively cut carbon emissions and leave no one behind. We need a truthful energy policy that gives workers the tools to capture carbon and methane, produce nuclear energy, and integrate new forms of energy into the grid. We need something we can actually pass into law." And I saw that part, and I just wanted to, eat dirt and run rabbits.
And he's a Democrat, yeah. So supposedly.
Because he says, Jesus, we need a truthful energy policy. And then he says we need to capture carbon and methane. Well, here's the truthful energy policy part of that, Scott. A truthful energy policy does not claim that advertising slogans are viable technologies. Carbon capture is no more a viable technology than clean coal is. They are both nothing more than advertising slogans. And no,
yeah.
See, Connor Lamb says that, what's the other part of that? We need to massively cut carbon emissions. No, The reality is, if we want the species to remain alive on this planet, we need to eliminate carbon emissions. And there is a substantial degree of difference between eliminate and cut. Because, see, that's the thing. Even I, who can't cipher worth fuck, know that if you divide one thing in two pieces, you have two halves.
Yeah.
And if you divide each half in two pieces, you have two quarters. And if you divide two quarters in two pieces, you have two eighths. And if you divide two eighths in two pieces, you have two sixteenths. But guess where you can cut and cut and cut and cut and cut and get, guess where you never get to, Scott? Zero.
Well, and it's they don't intend for it to ever get to zero. That's the... See, that takes me back to what I was saying before. We have a lack of imagination in this country. Think back to when Jimmy Carter had one of the early solar water heating things. I don't even think it was a solar panel in the classic sense that you see on a lot of rooftops today, and not nearly enough, by the way. I'm talking about a solar water heating device on the White House roof.
Oh, I know. I remember. Yeah, and it was the first. It was the first thing that Reagan did after taxing waitresses' tips was to have it removed.
Well, see, and this is the thing. But how many years ago was that? Reagan came in January of 81.
Yep.
And it's been at least that long that we have been pleading this case to get it done. Jesus, it's not that we don't have the capability in this country. We don't have the imagination, and we have the additional burden.
That is exactly we have a poverty of imagination, a poverty of
vision.
Wait a minute.
We have the vested interests to contend with who have lobbyists, and 40 lobbyists for each member of the House and Senate, pleading their case and writing the fucking laws under some administrations. So it's a factor of no fucking imagination, no American can-do spirit, and the bought and paid for nature of these fools on the Hill. I didn't mean to get this wound up so early in the call.
Yeah, but see, I do that to you.
It's like, good Christ on the cracker, Bob. I am not the brightest crayon in the box, yet if I can see it, how is it that we've got so many millions of Americans who don't get it? I mean, it just fries my butt in an environmentally positive way that we lack the imagination, we lack the can-do American spirit, and we lack the guts to tell the lobbyists and the special interests who are basically running one-third of our government, maybe two-thirds or three-thirds by now, or if Trump gets a second term, you may as well kiss the other two-thirds goodbye in terms of us having any goddamn discernible impact. I just, if I get it, everybody ought to be able to grasp it. And then hopefully take that second most necessary step and at long last do something about it. It's like, you know, what, two steps forward and three steps back.
Okay, and so here we are back where we started.
Well, we so often are when we get together, Bob. You know how it is.
If you want to, and I'm putting up my dick fingers now, scare quotes, do something about it, then as long as we're operating under the Constitution of the United States, you have to have the cooperation of Congress. Because for two presidencies now, one good, one nightmare, good-ish, one nightmare, we see what happens when a president tries to get most stuff done through executive order. An executive order affects only the executive branch. For instance, and we can go back further in history, Harry S. Truman could not break down the color barriers throughout American society. But he, by God, could integrate the military, and he did. And so, you know, there's some things you can do, some things you cannot. And if you want to do something about money in politics, you got to have the Congress to do it with. And if you want to do something about the environment or about protecting our future as a species, you got to have the Congress to do it with. And that means you've got to have people who are willing to go and do the work on the ground of teaching ignorant congressmen like Connor Lamb that you can't cut your way to zero emissions. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, definitely.
And there just really aren't that many people willing to do that kind of work. And, well, you know, we do at the 8 campaign. I mean, we occasionally touch on things like fracking. But, you know, I'm curious at why, you know, bless her heart, I'm proud of her. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was one of the first people to sign on to H.R. 2050 when it was introduced in this Congress.
And good for her.
Yeah.
Good for her. Because
you know who we've been begging to introduce the AIC Act in the Senate for 8 years? And who never has? Although we've been told, yep, any day now.
Bernie. Well, Jesus.
And you don't have to take my word for it. You can ask Bo Webb. I mean, it's a fact. That bill has been there and ready to be offered. It's elegant. It's short. It's easy. It does the job. And
what would possibly be keeping him?
Well, I mean, look, I'm enough of a political realist to realize that, you know, it's just going to join those other 400 fucking bills. If it passes the House, it's just going to join 400 other bills sitting on McConnell's desk waiting for him to die. Or the Congress to end.
Or be turned out to get a fucking Democratic majority in the Senate again.
Well, and that's the next part of it. You got to have a Democratic majority that believes in the issues that the person who's doing all the promising believes in. And that doesn't matter if it's Bernie or Elizabeth Warren or Mayor Pete or Amy Klobuchar or any of those people. Okay?
Well, when I was ranting a few moments ago, the next logical point would be whoever we put up as our nominee this summer and then in the fall, it's got to be someone of the caliber who, first of all, knows what the hell the deal is. Okay? They have to know. They can't be shuffling around not knowing anything about anything or playing dumb. Okay? So we've got to have somebody who is capable in the knowledge department,
yeah,
and the understanding.
And all too often, I fear that our political class aren't playing when it comes to playing dumb. There's a shitload of things that they don't know.
Yeah.
Because they've never lived it. Because millionaires live different lives from people who aren't.
Yeah. Okay, so, but anyway, whoever the nominee is, it's got to be somebody who knows what the deal is, okay? And not only knows what the deal is, but knows how to begin. Because, see, another person whose name should be on the list of horribles is one Leroy Newton Gingrich. That fucker made it a crime almost
to be a Democrat.
To even agree on anything that was for the good of the fucking country. He made
for a lot of American families, the elephant in the room is health care. And there are so many lies being told. And you know, I'd like to believe that, you know, well, you know, they just don't really understand. But no, you can tell what a lie sounds like. Lies sound different from ignorance. Lies have more resonance. Lies, for instance, include things like What's the 140 million Americans are going to lose their good health care, their good for-profit health care, if and we get that commie Medicare for all. Really?
I mean, yeah.
And meanwhile, study after study after study comes out and shows that, yes, Medicare for all is going to cost X. And that looks like a lot of money. But what they never tell you is that what we're doing now costs 2X.
Yeah. Okay? Did you happen to see John Oliver last night?
No, I didn't. And if you're not spending 2X, but you're spending 1.3X, you're actually saving money. Now, I got X's in there, which means algebra, which means I could very easily be wrong.
Or Muslims.
But yeah. They did invent it, you know.
Wait, let's
stick with the issue, please.
Okay, I'm sorry.
So when somebody says, when you've got a plan that says the goal of this plan is to provide health insurance to every living, breathing American from the moment before they are born till the moment they drop dead, then how can a plan like that possibly take health care away from 140 million hardworking Americans?
It doesn't.
It can't.
It can't and won't.
So whoever is pitching that bullshit is either stupid or assuming that a whole bunch of Americans are and lying their asses off.
Well, on this topic, since we don't want to change topics yet, I commend to you and the entire Horn family, beg, borrow, or steal access to John Oliver's show last night on HBO. He returned from his hiatus, his vacation or whatever, his seasonal break. And a good chunk of the program had to do with some of these points that you're raising about Medicare for all and the lies and misinformation and disinformation that's being told to our own goddamn national detriment as human beings and citizens and residents of this country. Okay? So however you go about doing it, get access to John Oliver's show from last night, Sunday night, and watch that segment. I'm sure it's on YouTube by now. And watch that segment about Medicare for All. He lays it out in perfectly good English, using good logic and bullet points and all that stuff, and you cannot argue with it. You would be a fool to try the simplicity of Medicare for All.
Right, because under the rubric that these people are using, I mean, try to imagine that it's 1968.
Yeah, which I remember well, by the way.
And Medicare is happening. Well, we can't have universal health care for our senior citizens. Well, that'd mean we'd become commies. They made that argument. And there are millions of American senior citizens who love choosing insurance over being able to eat a can of pork and beans every month. It's the same argument.
Yes, here's your history lesson, friends. Think back to 33 or 34 when Social Security was being debated, and think about in 65, I think it was, when LBJ inserted or got passed into law Medicare into that mix, okay? And think about who it was in the front of the line opposing both Social Security and Medicare, and more recently, the Affordable Care Act, as flawed as that was. Who was it who was in line each and every of those three historical moments, pivotal historical moments, who were first in line to say no? And I'll give you a hint. Their party symbol is the elephant, which should tell you something
Is it not true that Social Security was passed by a Democratic House and a Democratic Senate without a single Republican vote? Isn't that true?
It wouldn't surprise me.
And isn't that also the case with the Affordable Care Act?
and probably Medicare too. I mean, you've probably seen it on YouTube or online somewhere. Back when Medicare was being debated, no less a personage than Ronald Wilson Reagan
swore it was communism. He produced propaganda.
A record album, because that was the technology of the day that I'm sure landed in the homes of many stupid people.
Well, my fellow Americans, if we get this commie Medicare, no one will ever have ketchup again.
And he called it socialized medicine. Well, let's look at that word socialized. Now, there's nothing wrong with being social or being even sociable. I remember not too long ago, the Pepsi-Cola company promoted their beverage, their soft drink, as the sociable drink. That is to say, people getting together and bowling or playing ping pong or pool or going out on double dates and then afterwards...
Playing mumbly-peg.
Yes, let's go out for a Pepsi, gang. Okay, be sociable, you know?
Okay, now let's loop it back again.
All right.
We're going to knit a sweater before this evening's out.
Well, I need a sweater because cold weather is not gone from even California at night. So,
probably,
go ahead.
Probably down all the way to 60 at night, isn't it?
Oh, God, it's beautiful here today.
Shut up.
All right.
looping it. Okay, so how then do you pass Medicare for All when you've got a significant number of Democratic members of Congress who have been convinced, either because the check cleared or because their paycheck requires them not understanding, which is kind of the same thing, or because their best friend is the CEO of a for-profit healthcare company, how do you get the necessary numbers to pass Medicare for All?
When going in,
the number of people supporting Medicare for All is less than all the Republicans plus the Democrats who are convinced it won't work for whatever reason they are convinced.
When you say the people supporting, do you mean the people in America?
No, I mean the people in the Congress. The people in America don't get to pass legislation. We're still stuck with that old Constitution thingy.
Yeah. How do you do it? You don't. Not with the current configuration of the House and Senate, or maybe the Senate and some areas of the House. See,
okay,
again,
if, okay,
it goes...
So if that, but if that's
well, wait
the
a minute.
Ca- if, wait, wait, no, if that's the case, then...
Right.
If that's the case, then, isn't it incumbent to try to figure out something? And, of course, you know, Mayor Pete's Medicare for those who want it.
Everybody who wants it. That's a phrase.
That's just a...
That's an insidious phrase,
yeah,
to my mind.
I'd like to have health care that doesn't have a $10,000 deductible. I'm pretty sure that our dear friend Steve from Georgistan would like to have health care that doesn't charge him $300 a day just to lay in a hospital bed. Okay,
oh,
and
wow.
Yet somehow or another, that's insurance. Okay,
and that's somehow affordable. Jesus, who in the fuck can afford?
And so
$300 a day for anything.
Right. And so, you know, how do you go? I guess what I'm asking. Yeah, if it was up to me. Oh, dear God, I'm going to get myself in trouble. I'm not trying to. No, let me phrase this. If it was up to me, I would find a desert island somewhere, pour all kinds of resources into making it the most wonderful island on earth, and send all the health insurance executives to live on it together in peace, harmony, and happiness.
Yeah, but who would they screw? Would they start screwing one another?
Sure they would. It's in their nature.
I don't mean sexually. I mean economically.
No, it's in their nature.
I mean,
they could create a for-profit healthcare marketplace out there and have a free market paradise and never bother the rest of us again. It would be nice if we had a moon base. I mean, you know, they could ruin the moon or an asteroid somewhere. But short of being able to do that, and again, okay, see, now we loop away from the present and back into the past. I remember back in 2007, 2008, there was a lot of talk about having a public option, my friends. We've got to have a public option. And even before that, when Barack Obama was in the Illinois Senate saying, I absolutely support universal single-payer health care. And then he got into the business of presidenting and ran headlong into a Congress that he had a majority in, but that even it wasn't much interested. And so I remember when the Affordable Care Act was being considered in the Senate, we had a guy from Montana in the Senate who had a lot of power, and he had a D after his name.
And he's still there, I think.
And no, he's not. And his name was Max Baucus.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And a bunch of doctors tried to go into a subcommittee hearing to demand a public option. They weren't allowed to speak, and in fact, they were, if I recall correctly, rather forcefully escorted out of the room.
Ejected, I think is the word that you're looking for.
I believe it probably is. And if I recall, yeah. and if I am further correct, Max Baucus said there would not be a public option, there could not be a public option, there will never be a public option. And then somebody came up to him from the casino and handed him his winnings from the roulette wheel, at which point he said, I'm shocked to find out that there's gambling going on in this establishment. Shocked, yeah. I tell you.
What's Max doing nowadays? He's not the one that was the head of the pharmaceutical lobbying entity, is he? I know one of them went on.
Oh, no, Joe Lieberman.
No, it wasn't Lieberman. It was, I'm pretty sure, wasn't it the guy from Louisiana? Can't think of his name.
David
Bitter?
I'm
pretty sure. No. It was a Democrat, I believe.
Mary Landrieu was from Louisiana.
No. I mean, maybe it was a House member from Louisiana. Wish my memory was good enough to remember that guy's name, because he went, whoever it was, maybe it wasn't the guy from Louisiana, but one of these people who stood in the way of halfway decent, and it wasn't the greatest plan on earth. Hell, it had its origins on the Republican side, so there couldn't have been much to it. The Affordable Care Act, I mean, that's basically a Republican plan.
The Affordable Care Act was born over on Massachusetts Avenue at the Heritage Foundation.
Yeah, but whoever the guy was that I'm trying, whose name I can't remember, and I'm sure someone will remember this clown's name, but he went on after he left Congress. He got about as much as he could from that sugar kit, okay, and was hired on by, officially, mind you, by the pharmaceutical lobbying entity. And I'm sure somebody will come up with his name before we're through talking. But again, Bob, the answer is simple. It goes back to recapturing and rediscovering and re-implementing a couple of basic things that we have forgotten about. Having an imagination, a viable imagination politically and as Americans, having the imagination, recapturing the can-do spirit, and voting until we begin to see, not even missing the midterm chance to vote, the off-year chance to vote, every single time that we can until it begins to make a difference. And even that may not come quick enough to get done what needs to happen. And that's the pity of it. They have waylaid, they have stalled, they have been obstructionist to the point for lo these many, many years that there may not be a remedy. At long last, we may be permanently screwed, and the only prospect ahead of us is for it to get, for the degree of being screwed, to become more intense. That may very well be where we're at.
So we've just got to keep trundling along until the whole thing collapses under its own weight.
Well, I don't know. I don't know what else to do because.
Well, hey, that may come sooner than expected because I got a note. From Lady B. Just something to get our minds off this clusterfuck of an administration. The coronavirus. I really hadn't given it much of a thought, but my twin is a nurse, and that's all she talked about this weekend. Now, she doesn't have any deep inside info, but she says she wonders where her hospital's keeping the hazmat gear. And the CNN story I've attached says there may be even more people infected out there than we know. Is this a concern? The light dust masks I use at work have been sold out for weeks, and my brother-in-law says it's because their relatives are shipping them home to China. I ain't trying to start a panic. Just wanted to know what your World Traveler listeners and anonymous doctor and nurse listeners may know. Delta Airlines said today it is proactively reaching out to its passengers who recently traveled on one of its flights between Honolulu and Nagoya, Japan, after it became aware that two passengers on that flight are being reportedly treated for the novel coronavirus. Guess what could cause the wholesale collapse of the American for-profit insurance, health insurance system?
A well-timed plague, for lack of a better term.
Pandemic.
Pandemic would be the better.
Yes. Let's see. That's not Latin. That's Greek.
Yes. And Lady B is definitely on to something here, as she so often is. You know? And I don't know if she ever did talk in her radio career, but if I should ever be so fortunate to win Mega Millions from the Powerball or whatever, and can open a radio station, I will urge her to send a tape and resume post haste if that day ever comes to pass.
Oh, you wouldn't even ask her for the tape and the resume, would you? I mean,
well, no, I wouldn't. Given her missives and epistles to the Horn program, no, I wouldn't. But I'm just saying, and see, that's what's needed. If you don't like what's being said, you've got to change the conversation. We don't have megaphone enough, even with the Horn program. We need to duplicate the efforts all over the fucking place and get the word out. Because I know I'm the relentless optimist, Bob. I know this. I acknowledge this. We've been over this ground before. So I know that I'm just whistling past the graveyard. But still, I am fool enough to believe that there are enough people in this country who know that things ought not to be the way they currently are, and that something needs to be done quickly and consistently and ongoingly to because they say if you don't like what's being said, change the conversation. Well, we've been at changing the conversation, but we've got to do it more loudly and proudly and consistently and relentlessly until things begin to shift. We need a fucking course correction. God damn, we've needed one for the last 40 years, pert near. And I just don't know what's up with people. Are there too many stupid reality dancing competitions on TV that are diverting our attention? Have we given up? Do we not care anymore? I mean, five nights a week, you beat your brains out giving us good information. And, you know, from time to time, I do what I can, you know, and the other callers and the Horn family. And it almost is the point of weeping real tears that things have devolved to the point that they have in this country. And I know it was never perfect. It was never like the picture books said. But at one point, at many points in the past, we have evidence that when push comes to shove, we can do better. And maybe it's my relentless optimism talking, Bob. Maybe that's all it is, and maybe I need to shut up. I don't think so. I don't think the time, it's not the time to shut up. If anything, it's the time to crank that fucker up and activate people to the point that we haven't been activated in some time.
Well, let's go back in time, courtesy of Ron and Raleigh, serving as the Horn Ad Hoc Research Department.
Okay.
And let's check in with old 666 himself, Ronald Wilson Reagan. The cover of the album said, Ronald Reagan speaks out against socialized medicine.
Yeah, what'd I tell you?
Oh, and by the way, watching Taxi Driver last night.
Great film.
The plot has a vaguely political bent to it, but you never really get get a handle on what the politics of Senator Palentine's candidacy is. But his slogan, "We are the people," and Albert Brooks arguing with the button printer. No, last time we ordered them, it said "we" underline "are the people," which means we are the people. And this time you sent us 5,000 buttons with the word "we" underlined, which is "we are the people." Well, no, I think there is a bit of difference. There's a considerable difference here. Let me make it clear for you. We are the people, and we aren't paying for the buttons.
I had forgotten that he was in that. I've got to watch that
film
again.
It was his first film appearance. But what I found interesting is that there was a certain resonance to modern politics in that political candidacy, and Travis Bickle can't be said to be politically plugged in, and he tells you frequently. He tells people, "Well, I don't follow politics a lot, and I don't know a whole lot. We just need to clean this place up. The fucking, and there's that one line, one day there'll come a big rain and wash all the scum away."
Yeah, I remember that. Yes, jeez.
And this is all 1974. Nixon's still in office.
Is that movie that old?
It's being shot at the height of Watergate.
I'll be damned. I had forgotten that.
Yeah. Ah, Billy Tawson, Bruce writes in. Billy Tawson, a Republican congressman from Louisiana, helped Bush shepherd through Medicare Part D.
Ah, yes. And I had forgotten he was a Republican. I had forgotten his name. See, they come and go, but not quickly enough, you see.
Yeah. So so here we are. It's 1961. As Ron and Raleigh warns us on the YouTube video, do not go into the comments. Because
Have you got the audio? Are you going to play along
there's
with it?
Man, there's a lot right. of stupid there. Here we go.
My name is Ronald Reagan. I have been asked to talk on several subjects that have to do with the problems of the day. Now, back in 1927, an American socialist, Norman Thomas, 6 times candidate for president on the Socialist Party ticket, said the American people would never vote for socialism. But he said under the name of liberalism, the American people will adopt every fragment of the socialist program. There are many ways in which our government has invaded the precincts of private citizens, the method of earning a living. One of the traditional methods of imposing statism or socialism on a people has been by way of medicine. It's very easy to disguise a medical program as a humanitarian project. Most people are a little reluctant to oppose anything that suggests medical care for people who possibly can't afford it. James Madison, in 1788, speaking to the Virginia Convention, said, "Since the general civilization of mankind, I believe there are more instances of the abridgment of the freedom of the people by gradual and silent encroachment of those in power than by violent and sudden usurpations." Now, in our country, under our free enterprise system, we have seen medicine reach the greatest heights that it has in any country in the world.
I'm going to stop there for a minute to point out that even back in 1961, the goddess of irony was paying attention to the words of old 666 himself, Ronald Wilson Reagan. Medical science has reached the pinnacle of curing diseases, and all I got to do is wait another 20 or 30 years, and I'm going to die of something that for-profit medical science can't cure, and my brains will be mushroom gravy by then. Mommy. You got to be careful with shit like that.
And keep in mind, friends, this was before he was governor of California, wasn't it?
61?
This was long. Yes, he wasn't governor until 66, as I recall.
Someone in the comments said, well, see, he was a Democrat back when he said that. Thank God he changed parties.
Well, the thing is, he hadn't been governor yet. He was still a washed-up actor in 61, if that's when that record came out. I thought it was later than that. I thought it was coinciding with the start of the debate of Medicare. Medicare. But maybe I'm a little wrong on that. And another thing with this guy, after he left the California governorship, he had a five-minute daily program Monday through Friday on a shitload of radio stations who were affiliated with the Mutual Broadcasting System. Are you old enough to remember that, Bob? I remember seeing the ads for the program in Broadcasting Magazine in the 70s. Anyway, I kind of threw you a curve there, but is there more audio? Because the stupid is strong with this one.
Today, the relationship between patient and doctor in this country is something to be envied anyplace. The privacy, the care that is given to a person, the right to choose a doctor, the right to go from one doctor to the other.
Wait, the right to choose? What, Ronnie? Oh, wait, this is 12 years before Roe v. Wade. Never mind.
But let's also look from the other side at the freedom the doctor loses. A doctor would be reluctant to say this. Well, like you, I'm only a patient, so I can say it in his behalf. The doctor begins to lose freedoms. It's like telling a lie, and one leads to another. First, you decide that the doctor can have so many patients. They're equally divided among the various doctors by the government. But then the doctors aren't equally divided geographically. So a doctor decides he wants to practice in one town, and the government has to say to him, you can't live in that town. They already have enough doctors. You have to go someplace else. And from here, it's only a short step to dictating where he will go. This is a freedom that I wonder whether any of us have the right to take from any human being. Take it into your own occupation or that of your husband. All of us can see what happens once you establish the precedent.
Oddly enough, the Reynolds Metals Corporation, long and long ago, told my father that if he wanted to make silicon metal, he had to make it in Sheffield, Alabama. And that they would not countenance him making silicon metal for the Reynolds Metals Corporation anywhere except where they had a silicon furnace. Go figure. I had no idea that the Reynolds Metals Company was a bunch of socialist thugs.
Well, you broke up a little bit. Basically, they said he had to do it there in Alabama, or he wasn't going to get to do it at all,
right,
at least with that.
Yeah. But, okay, you know, according to old 666 himself, Ronald Wilson Reagan, that's your socialism's what that is right there.
I wonder who wrote that script that he was working from, because you know he was working from a script.
Well, probably the same people who wrote the check.
Well, yeah. I'll have to do some research on that because that, you know, that album, I bet you can go into the homes of elderly conservatives all over the country and find that in with the other vinyl. It was a record album.
Oh yeah. 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 This is only a 4-minute excerpt.
All right. It just seems longer. Is that what you're saying?
Well, you know, I don't make a point of listening to a lot of old 666 himself, Ronald Wilson Reagan's verbiage, because I generally like to keep dinner down.
But, you know, Bob, the thing is, whether it's 4 minutes or 4 hours, it's all bullshit.
Yes. Wait a minute.
You know?
Wait.
Thank you. I redeemed myself. That's true. I mean, and he didn't change his line of bullshit. Oh, the whole time he was governor, the whole time he was president, and not much time after that. I'm sure in his own mind he had conversations and speechified to only himself, silently, somehow.
And you know what I find funny is that he quotes a socialist presidential candidate, but curiously, the socialist presidential candidate he quotes isn't the most famous socialist presidential candidate and the most successful one this country ever had, Eugene V. Debs.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, who did he say? Norman Thomas?
I didn't pay attention.
I'm pretty sure that's who he said, if I heard it correctly.
The American people will never go for socialism, but they'll do anything as long as you tell them it's liberalism. Because, see, that old coot hated... And Reagan's such a fascinating character study and lack of character. You know the old story about how he became a rabid anti-communist, right?
Well, I know that he was a shill for the Borax people and for General Electric.
No, long before that. I mean, we're talking about when he was a B-movie actor in 30s Hollywood.
No, I don't. What was that? How did he get on the bandwagon?
Well, there were a bunch of Hollywood actors who were having a dalliance with communism, and I think it was Eddie Albert who used to tell the story. You know, Mr. Douglas.
Oh yeah, it's starting to ring a bell.
And he said, you know, a lot of us were flirting with communism back then. And Ronnie wanted to come in and be one, too. But we all hated him so much. He was such an annoying little pissant that none of us would let him. And so he decided that he hated communism.
And what time frame? In the 30s?
Yeah,
late 30s,
mid 30s, 40s, you know.
Yeah. And there was a time in this country when it wasn't just Democrats and Republicans. There were socialist candidates. There were other candidates. There were populists. Who was that? The famous was William Jennings Bryan, who ran four times.
Something like that. Hey, we've only got a little bit of time left in the program, about a little over a half an hour, but I just got a message, seeing as how we put out a big goose egg this evening.
Okay.
Keeping up with fundraising. An anonymous friend just said, it's time for another When Billionaires Choose, You Lose challenge. So there is
that sounds like a good idea.
So there is a $200 challenge on the table, and if met, if we can come up with $200 between now and 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time tomorrow, so that the podcasting group can get in on it, your contributions will be doubled up to the amount of $200 in total with the When Billionaires Choose, You Lose challenge. And you know what? That's the nice thing about this program. This ain't the program that the billionaires would choose. Because despite the fact that apparently I am insufficiently ideologically pure with regard to one or another, or perhaps all of the Democratic presidential candidates, and yet at the same time manage to say that I will joyfully, with a smile on my face, no nose holding whatsoever, go and vote for whomever is the nominee. Well, trust me when I say that ain't what the billionaires want. So the challenge is on the table. It would be great if we could take a big bite out of it before the program ends this evening, 32 minutes from now. And thank you very kindly for making it. Let me add a couple of notes that we've gotten in during the course of our conversation. Kim and Malin. Kim writes in from New Jersey. Open convention? Yeah, thankfully it's a real possibility. Your primary vote, right, might actually mean something, Bob. And by the way, stop complaining about your May primary. Mine in New Jersey is the very last one in June. I expect mine actually might mean something, too, though. My candidate is not on the ballot, so I won't get to vote for her on it. But I'm hoping that she'll be drafted after the first ballot fails to nominate the current lineup of candidates who are certain to lose against Trump. Run, Michelle,
was
run.
Was that New Jersey?
Yeah. Run, Michelle, run, or run, Oprah, run. Yeah, we'd need something that crazy to happen to have the slightest chance of winning. By the way, to celebrate President's Day today, Malin and I visited George Washington's Fort Nonsense in Morristown, New Jersey. Yeah, it's a real thing, named after the Revolution. It was a fortified lookout post on a mountain perched over Morristown, New Jersey, with a clear view of today's New York City skyline about 35 miles west of the city. We could clearly see the whole skyline today. Morristown is known as the military capital of the Revolution. Washington did not sleep in our house, but he marched right past the land our house is built on in Washington Township, Morris County, New Jersey. Well, thank you, Kim. And, you know, if we don't get a candidate on the first ballot, and this is, you know, look, this is the rules that people went in and hollered and carried on for. If we don't get a candidate on the first ballot at the convention, the second ballot lets the superdelegates back in.
Yeah, see, that's where the bad stuff can happen.
And you get a pretty good idea of how it will play then.
Mischief. Mischief.
Malarkey, even.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know that I could go on forever, but I wanted to bring a couple of items to the table.
I appreciate it. And by the way, thank you to Ralphs and Lady B. We now have only $185 to go on the When Billionaires Choose, You Lose challenge, so we have started on it. That's wonderful. Thank you so very much. Who wrote Ronnie's script? Flavio with an answer. Why, the good folks at the American Medical Association, the same people who are still against single-payer to this day.
That's right. That's right, the AMA. I think it was on the AMA record label.
Oh, dear God, was it? Is that a joke?
It wouldn't surprise me. I mean, if they were behind it, if they put the money up, I'm sure it was some stupid name for the record label, like Liberty Records or, you know, Freedom Records or, you know, something like that. But now that my memory's been refreshed, that the AMA, you know, lobby wrote the script, it would stand to reason that the label would have some sort of name. Unlike the Oral Roberts record label, those fuckers kept getting recalled because the hole kept healing itself.
Wait a minute.
I'm sorry.
You snuck up on me with that one, yeah.
Say hallelujah.
Say baby.
Oh, well.
Thank you. And thank you, by the way, to Frank. Our 185 just went down to 165, so we're making progress. Hey. Maybe we could pull this off in the next 28 minutes, and wouldn't that be awesome?
Well, I mean, my whole point in calling,
I hope I was at least to some degree successful,
is to get people thinking and fired up. That was where I was coming from tonight.
Well, you're going to find
and
this,
hopefully
you're going to find this interesting. Ron in Raleigh says the so-called statement by the socialist Norman Thomas has never been shown to exist. No source has ever been found. Once again.
I told you it was bullshit.
Yep. Once again, Republicans lied. And yes, this record was funded by the AMA.
Jesus.
Meanwhile, Brother Deacon Asa says, it's okay if a private corporation dictates where you must live. You're so far behind the script, Bob. Well, I know. Cockeyed optimist that I am, sure. Why not?
Yeah. Don't tell me you're giving me a run for my money in terms of relentless optimism.
No, I think I think it's got a lot of relent built in.
But am I on to something? I mean, goddamn, if I get it, like I said, I'm not the sharpest knife in the drawer, but if I can figure it out.
I think there's a thing
about American people. They don't like to get fucked. They don't like to get played. And we have had our recent history has just been overrun with opportunists playing us like fiddles or flutes or something. And I would think that people would resent it and get mad enough to make them stop, to make them go find other work. I mean, Billy Towson got found new work. He's the one that went on to head the pharmaceutical lobby, wasn't he?
No, that seems. No, that's a little too recent in time. I mean, the pharmaceutical lobby certainly predated him. But there's another aspect to this, Scott, that I think we should examine, and that's this.
All right.
We sit around and it has to do with not overlooking the fact that there is a plumb ton of work to do, and that it has to be accomplished, as noted, with the help of the Congress.
Yeah.
And compare, if you will, and this is just a little micro moment from back when we ever so briefly had veto-proof majorities in both houses, or a veto-proof majority a filibuster-proof majority in the Senate back in 2009. And the economy was melting, and one of the promised things that was going to be dealt with was something called the Employee Free Choice Act. The shorthand for it was that it was a card check bill. It made it much easier to join a union. And Harry Reid was a big proponent of it. He was the majority leader of the Senate. But the economy started melting. And suddenly you heard Ben Nelson of Nebraska, joined by Blanche Lincoln of Bentonville, Arkansas.
Yeah.
Declaring that no, we can't pass the Employee Free Choice Act because not shitting on work. This was no time. The economy's in trouble, and this is no time not to be shitting on workers.
And she was a Democrat.
Right.
In name, anyway.
And so was Ben Nelson of Nebraska.
Yeah.
And so was Mary Landrieu of Louisiana.
Yeah.
And so, in that moment, now, compare that with some of the head scratching that we've done here and other people have done over the last 3 years or so, in which we say to ourselves, wait a minute, I know that this Republican senator or that Republican senator can't possibly be on board with that sickening piece of shit in the White House. I mean, the man has talked about his morals all his life and how much little fake baby Jesus means to him. And this guy's not, and Trump's not even at two Corinthians. But guess what happened? On January the 20th, 2017, all those Republican senators and all those good Republican members of the House got in line with their president and their party and proceeded to go about the business of doing what they wanted in terms of accomplishing their agenda. How many times on this program has it been said that Senator X is okay with whatever vulgarity Trump engages in as long as he gets what he, Senator X, wants? Well, whatever it is that we want on our side, we need congressional majorities to do it. And so whoever's running for president is going to need some of what are commonly called coattails. You want the excitement for your presidential candidate to be sufficient to lift people who are further down the ballot. And then you want the people, in this particular case, we want to hold on to what we've got in the House. And we want to retake the majority in the Senate. And then treat Harry Reid as badly as Harry Reid has treated us.
Don't you mean Mitch?
I mean Mitch McConnell, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Not Harry. No, Harry Reid didn't treat anybody badly. He let his caucus do whatever the fuck they wanted to, and that's why they loved him so much, because he didn't lead. He was more like a kindergarten teacher who didn't like to call down the rowdies. But we better figure that out. Because it's one thing to say, golly gee, I sure do want me some single payer, or I sure do want me some Medicare for all, without bothering to stop to think what it would take to get it. Now, I don't know, maybe Kyle will get mad at me again and tell me that I'm not sufficiently dedicated to Medicare for all. But under a constitutional form of governance that such as we have, you got to get it through the Congress. And look how shitty the Affordable Care Act was. And they got that through the Congress, as previously noted, Scott, without a single Republican vote. Not one Republican would look at it and say, well, I mean, hell, our side did come up with it. It came straight over from the Heritage Foundation.
Yeah.
Why the hell couldn't... Yeah. Oh, wait. That Barack Obama. He sure does look dark. And God damn, he wore a tan suit. Son of a bitch, impeach him. No, God damn it, I know we can't have the Affordable Care Act. America will die. Because yeah. Our side does not unify like their side unifies.
Well, we better start getting busy with it, Bob.
Well, I agree. You know? I agree. It's just intensely frustrating to watch all the scab picking out there. And no, watching it online is not the same as watching it in real life. But you can go and find it happening in real life if you want to. When instead of letting your candidate's ideas compete with the ideas of other candidates, you instead show up to attack them and scream at them. I mean, we've seen that for about 4 years now. We know how that works. And it's the height of negativity. And it's not a recipe for success.
See, at that
and
point,
I've seen certain fairly loud online voices, and by loud I mean they've got a lot of followers or whatever, saying, "Well, God damn it, we're going to drive Michael Bloomberg from the race." Shh. Here's a little secret. You can't drive a man with $55 billion from anything. He will leave when and if he wants to go. Because this is a capitalist electoral system. And the money talks and the bullshit walks.
Yeah.
And the money's going to keep on talking. And the more you talk about driving him from the race, the more he's going to feel inclined to talk about you. Win on ideas.
Well, it may not be a bad thing to have him be in the race for a good chunk of time simply to occupy Donald's attention. See, you've got to have strategy.
I'm down for however much money Michael Bloomberg wants to spend trolling the fuck out of him, because I know that every new ad's got to be good for another point or two on his systolic and his diastolic.
Well, it's the old stoke the stroke approach to strategy and campaigning. I mean, I don't wish anybody any ill. Well, no, wait a minute. No, I don't deliberately want to see harm come to anybody of any stripe, okay? But then again, I don't want to be played. I don't want to be lied to. I don't want to have my intelligence insulted when someone of his ilk can become president of the United States. I take that personally. That just rubs me raw the wrong way, you know? And the thing is, and I don't mean to want to jump in the old DeLorean and go back 3 years or 4 years or whatever.
The flux capacitor.
So much of it could have been avoided had we only stuck together, like you say, unified. I mean, there are going to always be some elections where you hold your nose and, depending on your gender, cup your crotch and vote for your candidate. And it may be somewhat unfortunate, and it may not be your guy or your woman. But damn it, we now begin to see, God, if we haven't by now, then there's no hope for us. But you see what happens when it's one thing for someone to sneak in. It's another thing for someone to do or not do something that creates, it's like Jesus on Palm Sunday. You know, they're throwing the palm leaves down on the road and waving them at him as he comes in on the donkey. You know, it's one thing to have somebody slip in. It's another thing to enable the guy to do it. That's what bugs me.
Well, Brother Deacon Asus addressed along that line. He said, our side is also exceptionally bad at picking out the rat fucks and ejecting them from the huddle. The pig fuckers, in the meantime, excel at rat fuckery.
They encourage it. It's their stock in trade. And this goes back to the age of Newt Gingrich. I mean, his era. God knows it's gone, but he still shows up on TV from time to time, spouting his nonsense. Again, we got to recapture our imagination. We got to recapture our can-do thing. And then we've got to vote until we knock some sense into people.
It's like that silly bullshit of trying to cut carbon emissions until we get to zero carbon emissions. That'll never happen. Yeah. And I got a note from GK up in Minnesota saying, Bob, Bob, Bob. And, of course, Amy Klobuchar says fracking is a bridge fuel to a carbon-free future. Yeah, we got 9 years tops to get serious about, you know, not cutting emissions, carbon emissions by half, but eliminating them. And so another Moran Monday nominee that I guess I'll save for Titanic Tuesday is some Yahoo who's France has nuclear. They don't pay near as much for energy as Germany does, because Germany got rid of all its nuclear and just sort of blissfully, gleefully bebops right past, you know, Fukushima. Because what the hell, why not, right?
Yeah, well, yeah. I understand that was poor placement in regard to where the plant was put and not taking certain seismic events and fucking tidal waves.
Yeah, like putting a nuclear plant in Japan when Japan is prone to earthquakes and volcanic eruptions and tsunamis and shit.
Yeah, it's part of the Ring of Fire, as I recall.
There really wasn't a good place to put a nuclear plant in Japan, which becomes a larger issue. There really aren't that many good places to put nuclear plants anywhere on planet Earth.
Is that also a bridge source of power?
Oh, absolutely.
Maybe we need to rethink the need for neon lit cities in America and the world. Because to me, it's like, how many Camel signs and, you know, Coca-Cola signs or whatever signs.
That stupid light on top of the Luxor in Vegas is visible from space.
Well, yeah. But there I go again, thinking rationally, you know.
And meanwhile, Steve in New York says, nuclear plants in Japan, the worst part, Godzilla.
Well, yes, I remember old Godzilla.
Pretty soon, Godzilla.
Pretty soon you're going to have Godzilla and Mothra battling
Godzilla,
it out.
Zilla, you know? Zilla. Mm-hmm. I remember the song. I'm an old DJ.
Ah, man. Well, here I kind of thought that by the end of the call, that my spirits would be somewhat lifted, but now I'm more pissed off than I was. So
Say it, Scott.
We're all screwed, Bob.
People tune in just for that, Scott.
Jesus. Well, that ought to be worth a couple of bucks. I would kick in myself, but I'm poor as a church mouse at this point of the month, and it's a short month. That's the ironic thing.
And the church mouse is making collection calls on you. I understand.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. I hope that I raised a few good points,
What really happens, Will, is that we form a conversational sort of universe. And the points you raised contribute to the larger economy or the larger ecosystem of ideas.
Well, I was telling someone the other day online that this election, these primaries, and then the general election, once the nominees are in place, will be the most important election of anyone thus far. And we have got to behave in a manner consistent with choosing wisely, as one of the Raiders of the Lost Ark films told us to do. And we've got to show up. We've got to show up in unprecedented numbers. We've got to have a candidate.
And there it is. And that's why when you mentioned nose holding earlier, I'm going to, anytime anybody talks about nose holding, I'm going to push back on it from now to November and say, no, go with your mind, your eyes, and your nose wide open, and go with a smile on your face, because this isn't about, oh, well, you know, we might get Jimmy Carter, but we might get Gerald Ford. Fuck no. This is, I'm going to vote for somebody to keep my country and species from dying, or I'm going to vote for somebody who's going to kill my country or species. Smile. There is not a single candidate on there, with possibly one exception, that you wouldn't find some reason to smile about voting for. Because you are saving your country.
Yeah, well, I missed what you said because you cut out again. But the stakes are too high for anyone to stay home or to sit this out. That's the stark reality here. You're going to have a choice, and the choice is a chance at a future or not. That's the starkness of the choice this time around. And I don't think I'm being overly dramatic when I say that. That is literally the case this time around. And we cannot stay home. We cannot sit it out. We can't have a pity party or be disappointed. There's no room for disappointment. And I'm going to take that to heart, what you said. I've got my ballot for the primary right here. And I've got to get it back to whoever gets it before March 3rd. And I'm going to vote. I'm going to smile as I vote and realize that, you know, it is part of my contract as a human being and an American is to take every opportunity that is offered to me to make my voice heard and to be part of the solution as opposed to being part of the problem, as we used to say in the 60s. You know, and I will have failed in my personhood as a decent American to do less than that, to be informed, to be engaged, to be interactive with my fellows, and to get them going, and to make it my business that nobody sleeps in on election day. We've got to have an overwhelming turnout, and we've got to speak with as clear a voice as we can because I'm telling you, if we don't, I don't even want to think about if we don't. I don't scare easily. I've been through two marriages and a brain tumor, you know? So fear doesn't rear its ugly head very easily with me. But I'm telling you, when I think of the downside, the day after, the morning after Election Day, this time around, the fact that there's even a remote possibility that we would have an additional term in office by this monstrosity, this tangerine-colored monstrosity, that ought to keep you up nights. So,
yeah, and make no mistake, the possibility, I'd give the possibility even odds, if not greater than that at this point.
Well, and see, that's
because you
the
got
thing.
You got way too many people engaged in and you know, I begged, I pleaded, don't do this, but of course, you know, I'm nobody. But we've got way too many people engaged in attacking each of the other candidates who aren't whichever your candidate you're worshiping as a fucking god.
Yeah. You know, and that is a luxury. I don't even know if that's the right word. But that's something that we cannot afford that. That's not in our budget. It shouldn't be part of this process this time around or any time around. There's no room for error, is what it is.
Yeah.
Fail is, as Gene Kranz, the flight control person at NASA, said during the golden age of Apollo, failure is not an option. It's literally not. I don't know any other way to get it across to folks. And maybe I'm preaching to the choir. We already know this. But that knowledge
we have empirical data that shows we don't.
Well, and see, there's the rub. That's our mission.
Remember, earlier in this program, I got my progressive bona fides challenged because I'm not worshiping at the I'm not worshiping at the shrine of Bernie.
Well, and that's your right as an American.
I'm not a worshiper at all.
Well, that's your right as well, and I don't blame you if you don't.
But you've got a lot of people out there. That if you're not totally in the bag, in the tank, sold out, you're just wrong. Even if it's somebody like me whose policies are to the left of Bernie.
Yeah. Well.
Okay.
I'm telling you, we go down that road at our own peril.
I'm not the guy to tell that to. I'm not the guy who got that told to him. I'm scared of Bernie. What have I got to be scared of? Is he gonna tax my fucking mansion? Am I gonna be part of the wealth tax? Because I'm pretty fucking sure I'm not.
I'm pretty sure you're safe, Bob. You don't have to worry about that. You or me either. You know, and I'm sure most of the people listening don't have to
really. But I'm just sick to goddamn death of true believers and worshipers and people who spend all their time on their knees with their fucking mouths open.
Well, no, wait a minute. No, I get what you're saying.
Waiting for the magic cracker. And far away across the field, the tolling of an iron bell calls the faithful to their knees to hear the softly spoken magic spell.
Well, I don't, at this point.
But let me just do it again, though. If he's the nominee, I'm going to vote for him, smiling and laughing and dancing all the way to the polls.
Well, I'll be right there with you.
But I'm not going to have a voice in saying whether he's the nominee or not. Again, sorry, Kim. Sorry, Malin. May 12th.
I didn't realize they had primaries as late as the end of June.
Oh, yeah.
I thought they were over by the first week or so in June.
It is. And again, I come back to what is the single most viable way of fixing some of what's broken. And the neat thing is we don't need Congress for this one. The Democratic Party can do it all by themselves. One-day national primary. First Saturday in June.
At some point, given the current setup for primaries and caucuses and things, at some point it goes from being a choice to being an echo. Maybe not a very good echo.
The closest thing that West Virginia's primary ever got to relevance was back in 2004 when Locke upped the nomination.
And that was 2004.
Yep.
Well, see, here's the thing. One of the things that I like about Super Tuesday and having California be part of that, along with, 14 or 18 other states and municipalities, to me, it's almost like a preview of Election Day itself. You know?
Well, it is, because you've got two huge states. And part of the reason I think California got into it was to balance against, Texas.
Well, yeah.
Because it makes absolutely no sense for the core of the Democratic Party out in California to wait around to see what people want, what people in Texas want.
Well, the thing to me that's so invigorating about a primary day like Super Tuesday, I know that when I wake up on that day, if I haven't mailed in my ballot and end up carrying it over around the corner to my polling station, that as I'm doing that, there are millions of other Americans who are exercising their franchise, or they damn well better be, you know? And there's something invigorating about that. It's like a mini election day, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, and there's another wrinkle to this as well. And I'm not discounting you and all of our friends in California. But part of the places where people need to get over this business of holding one's nose and realize that this is an act of patriotism is not California. It's Pennsylvania. It's Michigan. It's Wisconsin. It's Ohio. It's Minnesota.
Oh, yeah.
It's Iowa. And it
would be... Because, California is never a swing state. I can't remember the last time we were ever even remotely... I don't think there's been a president in this century elected without the aid of the popular and electoral votes of California. I'm talking about the 21st century.
But the thing is, that constitutional anachronism from our hateful slavery past is going to be in play in November. And we damned well better bear
so
it in mind.
Places like Michigan and Ohio and Wisconsin and Pennsylvania need to get on the ball here.
No, we need to get on the ball explaining or discussing the ramifications. Because like Flavio just said, I'm not challenging your progressive bona fides. I never said Flavio did. I don't worship Bernie or anybody. Anybody that wins the Democratic nomination is going to be slimed by the Republican slime machine. You're absolutely right in saying what you said. It's existential. And it's just a one-question IQ test. Get it wrong, and we're done.
Yeah. I can't add anything to that. I mean, that's the bottom line here. That's the deal. And not only do our politicians need to know what the deal is, the voters need to know what the deal is. And I'm talking about the voters on our side.
Yeah.
The voters on the other side don't have a clue or a prayer of a clue. I mean, because if
all see, I worry that when the various camps spend way too much of their energy, because capacity is always a thing, when they spend too much of their capacity attacking their fellow Democratic candidates, that just makes it a little bit more likely that people are going to be pissed off and choose who you want to use as an example. The Pumas in 2008, who stayed away from voting for Barack Obama in larger numbers than the burnouts did in 2016. Stayed away from Hillary. I mean, those are both true things.
Yeah,
there multiple things can be true at the same time. But if you spend all your time attacking someone besides the target, there's too much of a risk of trouble in the future.
And can I take you very quickly in the waning moments here to pay a visit to the well-lit sign at any mall in America where you look at the thing and you see a little arrow and it says you are here and it gives you a point of reference for where you were headed in the first place at the big mall for those going to malls, if malls even exist
for those who
anymore.
Still have malls?
Yeah. Let's look at where we are in the exercise, Bob. We've had a caucus in Iowa and a primary in New Hampshire. We're still a week away from, or a little less than a week away, from the next caucus, and something like 2 weeks away from, well, 2 weeks tomorrow, 2 weeks away from the next actual primary down in South Carolina. We are so early in this process, it's literally on our side, any of these people could be the nominee, within reason. I mean, maybe not. Maybe numerically, some have a better chance than others, even now. But you still have time to make your voice heard and make your desires known. You know? And now is not the time to beat up on one another as voters or as candidates. Yes, point out the differences and the distinctions. By all means, have at it. Because ideas and goals and background and experience, all of that is part of the conversation that we have during primary season. But you are absolutely right on, 100%, with a gold star on your little forehead. When after someone has been made the nominee of our party, we better damn well get it right. And support whoever that is, even if it means whether you go singing or whether you go holding your nose and cupping your crotch, by God, support your nominee. Because without doing that, you may as well be on the other side. In effect, that's how you voted. If you can't put on your big person pants and do the right thing. And I'm not a person who preaches do the right thing, because I so often do the wrong thing, you know? But in this case, I'm saying, for God's sake, for America's sake, for the world's sake, we must get this right this time. We must. And this has been an invigorating and exhausting conversation. I don't know about how you're feeling or how the Horn family is feeling. But like I say, I go back and forth whether I'm feeling really good and optimistic and can do about it, or whether I'm giving my own examples of places we can fuck it up. God help us. We cannot fuck it up. We cannot. We must not.
Well, you know, Flavio says, bingo, I see too much of Democratic candidates attacking each other. Whatever happened to public enemy number one, Trump? Kind of makes you wonder. Well, I mean, it can't help but make you wonder if they really think that he is.
Well, God, if we're beating up in a serious way people on our own side, then maybe we deserve another 4 years. I'll go on record saying that, even though I don't believe
God,
that for a minute.
I can't. You know, because deserving's got nothing to do with it. But I just had a note from the author of our When Billionaires Choose, You Lose challenge, and we got mm-hmm. $165 to go on that, and we've gone a little overtime here, but we got $165 to go on that, and it would be great to get it knocked out so that I can know for a fact that we've got it done. The author of the challenge says, don't contribute to the campaigns. Contribute to independent media instead.
There's a thought.
So, yeah.
And that's a very good thought. And those who are in a position to, because it doesn't mean that you got to send $100. I'm a little behind in my support financially of the Horn, but that's virtually due to circumstances that are literally beyond my control at this point. Things will be turning around, and I'll do better in the future. But those of you who are in a position, you don't have to send a mega check. A couple of bucks from a lot of us can go way further than big checks from a few of us. Because it's an ongoing need to preserve an ongoing venue for ongoing conversations that should inspire us and enrich us and delight us on some level, that we're able not only to have the conversations, but what do we get as a result of the conversations having occurred? There's very few times when I don't end the program feeling a lot more confident because I've learned stuff, I've heard about things, I've been given opportunities to consider things in a different way that not in a million years would I have considered them that way had not some specific chunk of information come my way by way of this outlet. And hats off to you. And hats off to the people who support this broadcast, this podcast, this program. It's a venue that is so needful for it to exist and for it to thrive. You know? Well, you know, obviously, otherwise you wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
And again, I don't mean to preach to the already converted, but occasionally reminders are necessary. When I'm pointing the finger at others, I have three or four more fingers and a thumb anyway, pointing back at me. So I'm just as, you know, just as good an audience for my own good advice as anybody else.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think there's something to be said in constantly reminding ourselves. I mean, I had more morans this evening, but somehow or another we got sidetracked onto this. And I guess, you know, I guess it's going to bear repeating all the way to November.
I'm not
challenging anybody's support for any candidate. I caution against becoming a worshiper. I caution against becoming a true believer, what's it say in the book that I don't believe anything out of? Put not your faith in princes. Something like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's somewhere in that book. In more modern parlance, or political candidates. I had a great uncle who was a World War I veteran. He got gassed in France. He never was quite right when he got back home. And I had the pleasure of getting to know him as a little boy. And he was a little scary sometimes. But he was also a very nice man. And he looked at me one time and said, "Sprechen Sie Dutch?" I went, "No." But the other thing he said was, "Don't trust nobody but yourself. And don't trust yourself too far."
That's sage advice from a wise man.
Yeah, I have a feeling he may have come by it the hard way.
Well, the best advice is gained that way. The best knowledge is often gained through the school of hard knocks.
The best data is empirically gathered data.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, we put in a little overtime this evening, Scott. I'm glad you joined me in doing that. Have yourself a good evening. Find something good to watch. A lot of times I prefer flights of fancy over documentaries because, sometimes I've got all the reality I can stand.
Can I endorse quickly, a documentary for anybody who has the Epix, E-P-I-X, the Epix channel. It started last night. It runs for 6 episodes. It's a documentary series called Slow Burn, and it's about some of the untold stories of Watergate. Last night, the episode, it was on every Sunday night for the next 6 weeks. It concerned Martha Mitchell. Now, who remembers Martha Mitchell?
I do, and he says, raising his hand.
Well, there you go. So if you have Epix...
Oh, damn, Martha Mitchell.
if you have Epix, definitely watch this documentary series, Slow Burn. If you don't, but you have an Apple phone or have access to Apple Podcasts, and I guess it's available other places too, about a year and a half ago, one of the online magazines, I think Salon or Slate, one of them, did a multi-part series upon which this TV series on Epix is based. Same title, Slow Burn. That's free, and it's the audio version of a lot of the same information. Slow Burn podcast. There's like 7 or 8 episodes of that. If you don't have Epix TV, you can get the next best thing in the audio version. I learned shit about Watergate that I didn't know. So, and it's really funny how we've got to keep relearning lessons all over again. It's like we didn't learn enough from Watergate.
Wow, see, thank you for opening that door, because that leaves me the opportunity to close the program with that wonderful line from Excalibur and Nicol Williamson as Merlin, saying, "For it is the doom of men that they forget."
There you go. Bingo.
And that's either Nicol Williamson or Katharine Hepburn. I can't be sure which.
Thank you for a wondrous conversation. And thank the Horn family for making it possible, up to and including Bob, who is at the helm, who is shoveling, corralling cats.
Herding butterflies.
There you go.
Wrangling butterflies.
It's noble work, my friend.
You ever tried to and whistle up a butterfly?
They don't respond. They're almost like cats in that regard.
They're worse.
All right, man.
All right.
All the best.
Later, Scott. Bye now.
See ya.
And so we come to the end of this Moran Monday. We will roll some Morans over for Titanic Tuesday, no doubt. And please recall that there is $165 remaining on an anonymous $200 When Billionaires Choose, You Lose challenge. And it will expire at 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, Tuesday, the 18th day of February, 2020. Please don't let it expire unmet. Thanks to all of you who keep the program on the air. Thank you so very much. Y'all do a hell of a job keeping something going that would take gajillions of dollars if it was being done by the for-profit media. Here, we do it for pennies. Thank you. Whether you support the program as a subscriber on PayPal or Patreon or as an a la carte contributor or a combination, thank you. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky earlier in the evening in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. 20 years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.